Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we've got Mike from QL, just fresh off of a reserve grand championship in the Open out at the American Royal. Also, he took first in chicken at the Invitational, only at the American Royal. So he'll be on in just a few minutes to talk about Mike and Beth and the QL team. We'll be getting a bio on them, see where they came from and where they're heading to. They're one of the top teams in the country, or the top team in the country right now. So we're going to get their input in just a few minutes. I want to go over some notables this past weekend, like I said, at the American Royale. In the Invitational, Big Papa Smokers got grand champion. Iowa Smoky D's got reserve grand champion. Congrats to both of those teams. In the Open, Shiggin and Grinning got grand champion in the American Royale Open, and QL, of course, took reserve grand champion, so congrats to both of those. Also notable in the Jim Beam Classic up in Kentucky, Durag Barbecue took third place. Q and Stewart took fourth place, and Warren County Pork Choppers took fifth place. From what I heard, Warren County Choppers took the Kentucky, I guess they're like bourbon points or whatever. They won, the state overall in points this past weekend, so congratulations to Danny and his group for coming in first in that area of barbecue. Also, we had a competition up in Lawrence, South Carolina, Squealing on the Square. Redneck Scientific from North Carolina took grand champion, and the reserve grand champion was your truly Killer Bees Barbecue. That's our seventh reserve grand championship this year. We've had two grands, but hopefully we can bust through. We're getting really close. A lot of times that's the third one I've lost by half a point, but congrats, Redneck Scientific. Met them this weekend. Good group of guys. They're a pretty tough team out of North Carolina, so I think they've got nowhere to go but up. and they're going to be a tough team to compete with here shortly. I also want to put a few plugs in. Some of our sponsors is Royal Oak Charcoal. It is some of the best buff charcoal you'll ever use, low ash, high heat, and lasts a long time. Also, we have a new sponsor, Butcher Barbecue, premium injections and rubs and sauces. If you want to enhance the flavor of your meat, you need to really go to, really in anything you cook, go to Butcher Barbecue, look at some of the products they have, and use them. You won't be sorry. And as the old saying goes, you want to trust your butcher. David's been butchering and everything for eons of years. He knows everything, the scientist of meat, and he'll really help you out in the products. You can talk to him personally, which is what I like, and find out what's best for what product that you're cooking, whether it be competition in the backyard or just grilling. They've got some very unique products out there. So if you get a chance, give them a call, place an order, and you won't be sorry. Another sponsor we have is Fireside Outdoors Kitchens and Grills in Augusta, Georgia on Broad Street. They have over 14 or 15 different types of smokers and grills to choose from. They've got outdoor furniture. They carry all your competition rubs. Really fine place down there. They're very helpful, very knowledgeable. They give cooking classes on Tuesday nights for people such as myself. We got Wiki Q coming next Tuesday to do a brisket class. So Jeff Campbell will be down next Tuesday night to do that. He's got three teams that he sponsors, and Killer Bees being one of them. Ultimate Tailgaters is another one, and then Wayland's Weekly Good Q is another one that he sponsors. He really keeps up to date with the competition circuit and the products that we use out there. So if you get a chance, go by there, see what he's got, and try some of the products. Hell, even buy a new grill or whatever. He carries the Green Eggs. He carries the Memphis pellet smokers and several others, so give him a chance. Greg would do you right. Also, want to plug in Southern Q Smokers, quality smokers at an affordable price. They've got some water smokers. The one I use is called the TNT. It's a gravity-fed smoker. Love it very much. Do very well on them. If you want a really, really good smoker at an affordable price and one that you can get within 2 to 3 weeks turnaround, paint it just about any color you want, give them a call. They're on the web at Southern Q Smokers. Talk to Scott or Tim, and they'll hook you up with a smoker and even the competition barbecue trailer. They carry a full line of those also, and they can customize it to however you want it. So give them a call for you. If you're really serious about doing barbecue and even concessions, give them a call. You won't be sorry. I also want to thank Phoenix Printing here in Augusta for doing all my logos, all my shirts, wrapping my trailer. A couple of brothers on that, really good group of guys down there. They have a great design staff, and they'll pump out quality products in a short period of time. So if you get a chance, even if you're not from this area, give Phoenix Printing in Augusta, Georgia a call. If nothing else, they can design you something to put on your trailer. They can design your whole trailer if you want them to. Design your shirts, whatever you need, hats, koozies. They do a wonderful job down there. So give them a call. Other notables this week, we'll be heading down to Lyons, Georgia for the Real Squirrel, competing against quite a few good teams down there this weekend. And there's several other teams competing in North Carolina. They have one at Rocky Mount, the Eastern Carolina Throwdown. Be a lot of good teams up there. I know two of them in the Grill and Smokehouse Mafia and Tar Heel Smokers, and a bunch of others will be up there to compete in that. And also the big one, I guess two of them in the Grill won't be there because they're at the Big Sam's Club National is this weekend in Bentonville, Arkansas. We have a couple of my good friends, Bubba Latimer from Bubba Q and Scott Smith from Southern Q Smokers will be out there representing Georgia in the Sam's Club Nationals. Also, Two Minute Grill, Pick and Porkers, and a few others from North Carolina will be representing them. So I believe our guest tonight will be going down to QL. Several really good teams are going to be out there in Bentonville, and it's definitely going to be a shootout. So it's going to be interesting to see who comes out on top on that. lot of really good prize money out there. We finished 13th in our regional, so we didn't quite make it. So, you know, we'll try again next year. That's all I can say. So we'll have Q on here, and if anybody wants to call in and talk about their contest this week, feel free. We'll be plugging any contests that are coming up. Any organizers or any other teams that have contests coming up, we'll be more than happy to take you on the air and go with the contest in your area. What else have we got on the agenda? Oh, Barbecue Superstars. If you haven't joined, go ahead and join Barbecue Superstars. It's a really good organization. The money that 50% of the money that comes back will come back to the teams. The other 50% is for Daryl to go around and videotape teams, get you some sponsorships. He'll promote your team. That's what the other 50% of your money goes towards. Several teams around this area have joined, haven't been sorry. He makes a point, if you're a member, you got a members only show on Sunday nights, you can talk about how you did the weekend before. Or you don't have to be a competition team. You have to be somebody who loves barbecue. And join up, help him out, let him get some gas money so he can go to these contests to promote your team. We've got the World Food Championships coming up at the beginning of November. They'll be out in Las Vegas, Nevada. There'll be about 100 barbecue teams. They've got chili teams, hamburger teams, side item teams, I think desserts, actually, chefs. Whole nine yards. It's going to be a free-for-all out there. And there's going to be a lot of really good teams out there, so looking forward to that. We are qualified to go, so we'll probably be heading out there. We've also got a contest same weekend as that is up in Shelby, North Carolina, which is a really, really good contest. I think it's called the Hog Happening up there. We went up there last year and finished third overall out of 70-something teams, so we were really pleased with our outcome up there. We've also got one coming up in White County, Georgia. It's a Hillbilly Hog Throwdown up there. Heather Senior puts that on. It's a really good contest. It's in Cleveland, Georgia, which is near Helen, Georgia. Wonderful area up in that vicinity, just up in the mountains. It's really nice that time of year. So get a chance. You might want to compete in that. Also got one in Dalton, Georgia, coming up. And of course, the famous Jack Daniels coming up at the end of October. There again, several world-class teams up there, several teams from all over the world coming up there to compete in that. A good friend of mine, Robert Marion, who has a job with the military. He is a counselor for the military when they come back from overseas, trying to get them readjusted to the American way of life. And he does really good with the troops and everything. Last year, he skipped his chance to go to the Jack Daniels World Championship because he had a platoon of soldiers coming in that week, and he felt like it was more of his duty to help the soldiers out than it was to go to the Jack Daniels. So this year, Jack Daniels, being a very American company, extended his invitation this year for him to compete in this year's Jack Daniels because he could not compete last year. So my hat's off to them. It's nice to see several companies still doing the right thing and supporting the troops and everybody that helps them. So my hat's off to Robert Marion. I had a chance to talk to him this weekend, and hopefully he might be calling in later on today. Right now we've got our first caller, which is the guest of honor, I guess, of the show. Is this Mike? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Mike. This is Mike from QL. World-class barbecue team, number one in the country right now. So how you feeling after your reserve grand?
Real good. We had a pretty good weekend down there. We got a first-place chicken in the Invitational, and then we were hoping to get another calling chicken Sunday for the Open, but it didn't happen. And then we got second-place call in brisket, which actually, as it turned out, we tied for first with Ryan Newstrom, a big tease, and once you know it, we lost the tiebreaker.
I lose a lot of those. I don't know about you, but a lot of those I always lose. I very, very rarely do I win one.
Well, it seems like we lose the important ones.
Was it making the most money?
Yeah, that would have made us more money. Also, you know, Ryan is first place in Team of the Year Brisket right now, and we're second. And if the roles were reversed yesterday, we would have gotten quite a bit closer to him. But as it is now, we only have 3 points paying events left, so it's going to be tough for us. We almost have to run the board to have a chance to catch him.
Well, if there's a team out there that can do it, I'm sure y'all can do it.
Well, we're going to try.
Yeah, you can't give up now. So I know a lot of people want to hear about your biography of QAL. Me included, want to know how y'all got started doing this and how long y'all been doing. And we want your name off each and every one of your grand championships and reserve grand championships.
Well, that would be tough. I'll give you a little biography here. We've been doing this 12 years. I used to race motorcycles. I raced for 11 years. I was a two-time cross-country champion here in Illinois. So I was always a competitive person. And I got injured. That's why I walk with a cane. I got injured actually in an industrial accident up in Milan, Michigan at a Ford plant years ago. And anyway, so after I recovered, I got interested in I've always been interested in cooking. And here in Peoria, Illinois, which is a big town right next to us, they had a rib fest, and we entered that. And let me tell you how I cooked our ribs that first year. We pressure cooked our ribs. I made a rack inside the pressure cooker, and we put the racks of ribs up on top so they weren't in the water. And we pressure cooked them for about 40 minutes, and then we put them on a grill with sauce and grilled them off. And actually, I thought they were pretty good at the time. And today, if you ate them today, you'd still think they weren't too bad.
So where did you finish up at?
We didn't get a call. But then we did a couple more. I met Mike Lake, who at the time was a board member, I think, of KCBS. You know, he later became the president. And he started telling us about KCBS, and he said, well, he runs this little contest up in Shannon, Illinois, the Illinois State Championship, and he said, we cook chicken and ribs and pork butt and beef brisket. And, well, I knew all about chicken and ribs, but I wasn't sure what a pork butt was. And the only type of brisket I think I had ever eaten at that time was corned beef brisket. And he explained to me that wasn't quite what he was talking about. So the following, I think it was January, my wife and I took the judging class. And we learned a little bit more about it. And then I can fabricate a little bit. And I got a welder and stuff. And I made a cooker out of a 300-gallon tank. And we entered our first contest in June of 2001. And it was down in Cairo, Illinois, the very tip of Illinois where the Ohio and the Mississippi come together. And after we got eaten up by mosquitoes for 2 days, we thought, well, heck, there's 31 teams here and they're paying 10 places. We should be able to get something. And we didn't. I think the best we did, we got 12th place in ribs. And then we went to another contest in Iowa, and we won the appetizer category. And by the end of that first year, I think we got a third place in chicken, you know, in one of the actual meat categories. So we were on our way. And then 2003, we cooked 5 contests that first year. And then 2003, I think we cooked 10. And we actually ended up, we got 2 reserves and a grand. And then, let's see, 2003, we won another grand. And then 2004, we did pretty well. I think we were 4th place in KCBS. We won that year. We won the Great Barbecue also there in Des Moines, and we won a couple other contests in Iowa, and we won one in Minnesota. And we were in the Jack that 2004 because of one of the wins we had.
Right, got the draw.
Yeah, well, it was an automatic because I think we had won one in Minnesota. And it was the only contest in Minnesota, so we got to go automatically. And at the end of 2004, we won one in Ohio, and that got us in for 2005. So we've been to the Jack now. This will be the eighth year. And the only year we missed sequentially was 2008, which we had, I think, six draws, and we didn't make it.
Yeah, Ron Gray, he always told me, he said, you never want to leave with a chance. So he said, if you get your seven, he said, try like hell to get that number seven.
Yeah, you don't feel so bad if you got four draws and you miss out. But if you got six draws and you miss out, boy, you can just kick yourself in the butt for not getting that seventh one. And fortunately, we've actually had seven, I think, three times. And we even had seven last year when we were returning champions, but we didn't need them, of course. And this year we only had, as far as the Jack year went, we only had four. And the sequence has turned out perfect for us. My buddy Parrothead from South Dakota, he won a contest in Ohio, and he won a couple others, and he drew out of Kansas, and then that took him. There were three contests in Wyoming, so that took him out of Wyoming, and then the other team, I think it was Flyboy Barbecue, they won one in Wyoming, and they got drawn out of Colorado, so it just left us in Wyoming. So we basically got to go. So we were real happy that it worked out that way.
Well, that's good. It always happens for a reason. So yeah. Hopefully you can go back and repeat. And, you know, I know Jack, I hadn't been there. I had two draws this year and didn't get drawn. But, you know, that's where life goes. Trying to win, I think I won six, seven reserves this year. So I'm plugging along. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Well, we're working on next year already. Yesterday, if we would have won, that would have been an automatic. And, well, we came close. We really thought our chicken, you know, we won the invitation, and we thought our chicken in the open was better, and the judges didn't think so. And if we just had a couple more points here or there, we would have won. But, you know, it's up to the judges, and there's nothing you can do about it. You can't really worry about it because it's done and it's over. But, we got three draws already for next year's Jack, so we need to work on it, I guess. Either that or win the Jack, and then we get to go back, so we'll be happy.
You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
But you still want to win those grands, though, to go along with everything y'all do.
Right. Yeah, we kind of we started out kind of slow this year. We were changing stuff up, beginning of the year we were hitting in brisket pretty regularly, and we were getting some good rib calls, but our chicken had fallen off. We had switched. We've switched back and forth between thighs and legs, and in fact, last year at the Royal Open, we won. We were first place chicken out of whatever. There's 480 teams with legs,
uh-huh.
And so anyway, beginning of this year, we were doing all right with the legs. And I tell you what I think happened, and it's not really her fault, but Diva Q was on Pitmasters, and she showed people how to do lollipop legs.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we noticed. Everybody start posting on Facebook and other stuff that they go, look, I got these beautiful-looking legs, lollipop legs, and but I'm not scoring well. Well, legs are really tough to cook. There's a lot more tendons and stuff in them, and you got to get all that tendons and stuff out of there. You got to cut them out. And, in fact, there's one muscle that's got a big, wide tendon, and that muscle's a tough one. And if you don't cook it exactly right, you bite into it on that side, you're going to have a real tough piece of meat. And so my wife and I talked about it. We said, well, look, we did real well last year with legs. We finished second in KCBS Team of the Year with legs. And I said, you know what, I think there's just too many people trying them now, and I think it's time to switch back. So here about, I'll tell you, the first time we switched back to thighs was when it was our Sam's regional up in Rockford, Illinois, and we ended up getting second. We had to practice a little bit because we hadn't cooked them for about 2 years or 2.5 years, and we switched back, and we nailed it and got a second, and then we've had six first place since switching back to thighs. But the problem it was, we won the Invitational chicken, which doesn't pay any points, but you know, the healthy check that they send you from the Royal, that makes up for some of that pain and suffering that I've been exposed to.
Can't complain a whole lot there, Mike. I mean,
No. We don't complain. You know, that money, them checks they send you, that goes a long ways in making it better.
Yeah. But, now, you know, number one team last year, South Fork and Chicken, they cooked legs all year.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, we cooked legs all last year, too.
Yeah. Well, they fell off talking to Suzanne up in Rome, her aunt Scott, and they had fallen off for one of the ingredients they use is Bad Vines butt rub, mm-hmm. and he manufactures and it switched the rub. So they've come up with their own rub, and she told us up in Rome that they were going to use their own rub on the chicken, and they did. It took first place.
Perfect. Wow, that's good.
Perfect, perfect 180. So we said, well, when do we get some of that rub?
Well, so anyway. I think part of it, though, is that everybody was trying them after, Diva did it on Pitmasters, and people that had never thought of doing legs start doing the lollipops, and I think that's pretty much what Scott and Suzanne do. Just like what we were doing last year, but it was kind of a novel idea. You know, there wasn't too many people. I think Swine Assassins were doing something like that too. And then when you get, you had a whole bunch of people trying it because they were posting all over Facebook. And when the judges see, you know, they might get two or three of them at their table, then it's not quite the fancy deal that it was before. You know, so that's, you know, I've never been afraid to switch. I'll tell you, we've turned in legs, we've turned in thighs, we've turned in all white meat. We try to turn in white meat if we get some that looks good. But there's been times when either the white meat was dry or something, we didn't turn it in. And we had one time this year when we did legs, and I did not, before we switched, and I didn't like the legs at all. They were, the spicing wasn't right on them. They were too, we must have put too much cayenne in them or something. And I said, I told my wife, I said, we can't put these in. The judge is going to get their mouths burnt. So we just put in white meat down the middle, you know, eight chunks of it or something, and we put a whole bunch of parsley around it. And we ended up getting fourth. So sometimes you just got to go with what you got.
That's right. You can only finagle so much out there because you only got, you know, so much to choose from. So
yeah.
I
teach a class usually once a year with Scotty Johnson for his charity, you know, Cancer Sucks. And that's one thing I tell people. I said, you know, if you're putting two or three different things in a box, I said, that leaves you a leeway because if something doesn't turn out, you got something to put in. I mean, say your brisket turns out dry. Usually the point, you can get a few chunks off of her burn ends, and you can just turn them in. I mean, as long as you turn something in, you're not going to get skunked. But, boy,
right.
If you turn in a bunch of dry slices of brisket, and it's like pulling on a big, long rubber band, you're going to get killed.
Yeah, another thing, too, though, you know, with brisket, you can take some of the point or even some of the flat that's probably overdone and shred it and put in a little lodge. You can put it in there as pulled brisket. You know, I've heard a team doing that. It's going pretty well. So.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do.
Well, judges these days are, I know the reps, I know in this area, really, really push them to be open with what teams are trying. You know, don't expect burn ends all the time, don't expect mm-hmm. pulled pork in there all the time, or money muscles. You know, you judge it for what you got.
Yeah.
And we got cold soldiers out there like, if I don't see burn ends in them, I'm not giving them a 9-0 appearance.
Yeah.
You know, that's why. But, you know, KCBS next year be cracking down on that because, you know, it's become a big business. A lot of people's livelihood depends on it. And, you know, it's important to us because we've got so much money and time and effort invested in this. You know, we want the judges to be as fair as possible just because you don't you want to see, like, you know, like I said, you want to see money muscle in the pork box and it's not in there. That's no reason to support a team down. You know what
yeah.
I'm saying?
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Hopefully all the judges will get on board in case this. This is my first year. This is only really my second full year doing this. We finished 41st in the country last year, 42nd in brisket, I think.
Well,
my first contest was like you. I didn't even know what a brisket looked like. I've never even cooked one. I got 10th place in my first cook. So and that was the only call I got was a brisket. So, okay, I'm hooked now. I'm ready.
Yeah.
I can do this.
Yeah. You touched on, a lot of these brand new judges, you know, they get about 4 or 5 hours of training, and it's really hard for them to remember everything they learned. And I'll give you an example. One time, it's been a few years ago, some lady judge, she just took the class, and she said, the rules were a little bit different, and I'll go over what she thought, but she goes, I got 6 pieces of chicken, but they weren't identical. And, well, I've helped with a bunch of classes over the years. You know, I've cooked or I've been the table captain for a judging class. And the rule, it said 6 identifiable, and she heard identical. and she didn't know how to score them, and so everybody hammered her on the barbecue forum. You said, no, it doesn't say identical, it says identifiable. And so that
right.
when they take these classes, they get, you know, they don't remember everything, and a brand new judge is probably the most dangerous one, because for the one thing, they don't realize how much this costs. I mean, it cost us on average probably close to $1,000 to do a contest.
Yep.
You know, with diesel fuel and all the meat and all the other expenses. And, you know, some of them cost more, some cost less, depending on how far they are, but it probably averages out about that. It's like, you really don't want some judges that, you know, are just, you know, not knowing what they're doing, you know, when there's that much at stake. And I realize they got to learn somewhere, and but, you know, you just don't want, you know, if you got one at each table, it's not so bad, but, boy, you just don't want a contest where you've got a whole bunch of judges or judges, you know, just come off the street.
Right.
You know, I prefer to, you know, that's why we, in the spring, we go down south, we cook on the, you know, down there. We love, like, Mobile, Alabama, and Pensacola, and Hammond, Louisiana, and Tupelo, we did that last year. It's a nice one. And you get a lot of, there's a lot of judges in that area, because a lot of them used to do Memphis and May, and a lot of them still do Memphis and May, and or MBN and KCBS, so got a lot of experienced judges, and so that's why we like to go to those areas. But, you get up north, the farther north you get, you know, it's a little sparse as far as real experienced judges. And sometimes you see some strange stuff happen, you know.
Yeah, that's, you know, I've had about 5 or 6 judges this year so far cook with me. And, you know, I have one guy, he's going for his master judge, and he's didn't live too far from me, and he helped me cook the Banjo-Bajou up here. I got a reserve grand up there.
Uh-huh.
There's 76 teams. We had all you guys out there. You weren't there, but, you know, we had Tuffy and Johnny Trigg and Mike Davis, and had a bunch of hogs with Hilton Pork Barrel Barbecue.
Yeah.
I mean, all three of them, you know, Cereal Griller, Pickin' Porkers, Two of Them in the Grill, Blue Bloods. I mean, they were there. And
yeah, it's a tough crowd.
It was. And we ended up reserve grand by 0.5 there again. We lost 2 old men in the grill. But you know, the judge I had there, he was on his 28th to 29th contest. You know, he's been around a lot of teams, you know, visited a lot of teams. He always made a point of doing that. And we got done. He said, I'll be honest with you. He said, when you do that many and you really try to interact with teams, he said, I really thought I knew what really went on, you know, with the team, how they prep, how they got ready for this thing and everything. He said, but after watching you and hearing what you do, he said, you start on Tuesday. And I said, yeah, our team start on Monday. And he said, to go through everything that you go through, he said, I had not one iota clue on what y'all go through until now.
Exactly.
He said, I thought I knew. And he said, I'm telling you, he said, I talked to a lot of teams. I'm around a lot of teams. But he said, I'm going to tell you what. He said, until a judge cooks with a team, you really absolutely, positively, honestly do not have a clue on what goes on with a cook team.
Yeah. You know? A lot of teams I talk to, they wish that the judges would be required to cook with a team a lot sooner than, you know, when they get close to their masters. You know, if they could, like, in their first 5 or 6, you know, cook with a team. And then they got a better idea, you know, that everybody is doing a big effort. You know, whether they finish first or last, the effort is the same. You know, the work they're doing is the same. The money they're spending is pretty much the same. And to get to that top level, I mean, it's just they got to pay their dues and everything like that. But they're still doing the same amount of work. And we just, you know, you want them to appreciate that, though, the work you're doing, and not take it, you know, just haphazardly, I guess. But I think most judges are really in it to try to do their best. But you know, when you're a brand new judge, and it's like being a brand new cook, you're not real sure of what you're supposed to do. It's like when I started cooking, I didn't know how to get sliced pork. I had to talk to some people that, you know, when we started 12 years ago, you didn't have an internet or anything like that to refer to. Or there was no classes to take, so you just had to learn from other people. And, you know, I didn't know how to, you know, get a sliced pork. And somebody said, well, you just cook it to a less temperature, you know, instead of, you got, so we end up cooking one to pull and one to slice. And you know, stuff like that. But it takes a while to learn, you know, and judges, well, after they've done several contests. And also the judges will sit at the tables after, you know, they've written their scores down, and they'll talk. And the more experienced judges will talk to the less experienced ones and explain, yeah, that money muscle there, that was cooked correctly or whatever. And they learn a lot from those discussions at those tables. And so, you know, I always like to interact with judges also, like you say, you like to talk to them.
Yeah, well, I'm a big advocate, like you said. In my opinion, I think a judge needs to get a cookout before his 10th one, and then every 10 subsequently for a while, because I think even some master judges are stuck in their own ways, and, you know, flavor profiles have changed, and, you know, they may lean towards more spicier, a little bit more savory, a little sweeter or whatever. And, you know, I'm thinking even as, you know, even as you grow older, and you admit that your palate changes too.
Mm-hmm.
So stuff you have to taste 10 years ago, you can't really taste now. So in my opinion, I think they need to keep them on edge and just do a refreshing. You know, every 10 or 12, even 15 contests they do, even after master judging, you know, it makes the teams feel good because, you know, they're getting their so-called continuing education in. And, you know, like you said, I think a lot of judges give you more of a benefit of the doubt because they look like, oh, hell, they just threw some meat on the grill and cooked it, whoopee-doo. Well, when you see what we go through, it's like, well, you know, I need to take a little bit more consideration. But I've got a couple judges that are kind of friends now, and he was telling me, and he's going to report this guy, but he was telling me about a judge up in Chesapeake or somewhere when they were judging, and it floored me on what this judge was doing. And I'm like, if this guy does not get kicked out, I think he was a master judge. Just screwing with the reps and stuff. I mean, I can't say it on air or anything, but it was just unbelievable what this guy was doing.
Huh.
And it was really, you know, it really messes with the team scoring stuff, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, you know, if you get a 7, you have to count a 7 in taste, you're pretty much done.
Yeah, yeah, you know? You are.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you get, like my last brisket, I got 4, 5 9s in appearance, and I get a 7 in appearance. Like, what did you see that these other teams didn't? You know, I'm thinking, is this a new judge or is this a master judge?
Sure.
I didn't put any burnt ends in mine, so I'm thinking, well, could be somebody who just said, if I don't see burn ends, I'm not going to score it high.
Well, we've been doing this long enough where we have pretty good presentations, and we expect, you know, all 8s and 9s. And so when we see a 7, and, you know, beforehand, lots of times I'll tell you, those at the cook's meeting, they'll say, well, we've got some new judges, and we're spread around. There'll be at least 2 at each table. Well, that, to me, though, that just scares the crap out of me. Because,
yeah.
And I'm pretty certain, with about 80% certainty, that I can tell you which ones the new judges are. They are the ones, like you say, that are reluctant to give those 9s out in presentation. And I think it's because, presentation hits the table first, and they're not supposed to compare, but they're reluctant to throw that 9 because they're thinking, well, maybe the next one's better looking or something like that. But, and it takes, it's human nature to compare. It really is. And but yet in KCVS, they don't want them to compare. I know the other organizations, they let them compare, you know, and they pick out the best one. And I don't know which is better or not. I mean, we're KCVS cooks, and, you know, we've done several that weren't KCVS, but, you know, by and large, that's all we cook is KCVS. So I don't know that it's any better than the other ones. But I know human nature is to compare, and I think some of the new judges, it's hard for them to get out of thinking that way.
Well, I'd like to see KCVS also, in my opinion, and you can say yay or nay. I wish they'd go to a half-point system where, you know, if it's not quite a 9, but it's better than 8, they're going to give you an 8, you know. So why not throw an 8.5 or 7.5? It's not going to mess with anything else other than, you know, and it's simple for the judges to keep up with. But
yeah,
I
can tell you what they'll say. They just spent a lot of money on their software, scoring software, and they don't want to spend a bunch more money to update it to a half point. I'm pretty certain that's what they would tell you, but that's been suggested before. And I think normally what they'll tell them is that if you know, if it's between an 8 or a 9 or a 7 and 8, give the cook the benefit of the doubt. And, I really don't know. You know, I just know from a standpoint that they're probably not going to change it because it would require a big software change. And I know they don't want to do that because they're still updating this software so they can track judges somewhat. And I haven't seen that yet, but some of the I guess they've been experimenting with some of the contests, and you can actually track the judges.
Well, I think that's good, too, because, you know, if the judge consistently doing it low, when the other judges are, you know, all in sync, I mean, you know, teams are held accountable by their scores. You know, judges ought to be held accountable by their scores.
Yeah.
You know, when we cook, now, like I said, this is probably my second full year. I cooked 5 2 years ago. I cooked 22 next year, last year. But I'm doing, I do a couple South Carolina Barbecue Associations. I do a few Southern Barbecue Network Association type cooks and everything. And then KCBS. They do one Florida Barbecue Association and one that one. And which is a shock. I'm one and done. Got a grand. I'm out of there, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, it was it's kind of interesting on different scoring of each sanctioning body that you had. And, you know, with the judges, like you said, you know, the newer judges, I don't think the palates really pick out subtle differences or, like you said, what they're really supposed to be looking for. You know, they're used to Shane's or Sticky Fingers or something like that.
Yeah.
They get a few, and some judges are like, wow, that's great. It's best they're right. Then they get no, they score that one. They get no, wow, well, that was better than the first one, but, you know, I already scored the first one high.
Yeah.
So, I talked to several judges that it takes them 5 or 6 contests to kind of get in that groove of what you can expect with appearance, what you can expect with attentiveness, and then the taste. You know, they're all kind of, you know, the judges I've talked to have done like 8 or 9, they just got like over that hump. They're like, well, now we know what kind of flavor profile that everybody's kind of trying to get to. And
yeah,
like you said, they adjust their palates for that. And that's why I wholeheartedly agree with you on getting these judges out and cook. Because, see, they're going to help the cook team. You know, they're going to say, well, I like a little bit spicier. Well, at that time before turning, you can add a little bit of flavor to it. You can add a little heat. You can add a little sweet to it, you know, right at the end. So, you know, when you get a judge like that, you say, well, I prefer it this way or I prefer it that way.
Mm-hmm.
You still have a chance to tweak it. And they're helping the team out. Team's helping them out with the profile they're trying to accomplish. So, you know, it's never going to hurt. I don't know if really any team's just not, you know, if a judge comes up and wants to cook with them, I just don't know any teams that's not, you know, obliged by letting them cook. Whether they help with the process or not, like Steve, I mean, I had him in the trimming of my butts and stuff. I showed him how to do one, and he took the rest, and he trimmed them up, and we got 11 some pork. So I said, I can't complain about that.
Yeah. I always recommend to cooks that, you know, if they can, talk to some of the judges. Most of the time, judges will mill around after a contest and talk to teams. And I always say, you know, talk to them. Learn, you know, ask them, say, did you get more baby backs? Did you get more spare ribs? And which ones do you like? And one thing, the biggest complaint, and this usually comes from master judges, is there's too much sauce. I know some of the master judges will, like, take a rib and rip it apart and so they can get to the meat underneath. And, you know, when I help Scotty with his class up there in Chicago, I'll do baby or loin back ribs, and I'll do them without wrapping them or anything, and which is when we won the ribs at the Jack there in 2010, that's the way we did them. And I said, your rib needs to taste good without any sauce on it. I said, then the sauce will enhance it. If your rib doesn't taste good before you sauce it, I said, then all you're doing is masking a bad taste. And a lot of people don't realize it. It's like the meat should taste good without any sauce on it. And then the sauce needs to enhance it. And that's why these master judges, they'll get in there and they'll start, you know, like I said, they'll rip a piece of chicken apart, they'll rip the rib apart to get in there to the meat that doesn't have any sauce on it to taste the meat. And, you know, I think a lot of new judges don't catch that. You know, they bite into it. And for them, it might be more of a sauce contest, whereas with the master judges, it's more of a meat. They're more interested in the quality of the meat, how it tastes, and how the texture of it is.
And that's where you get that fine line in there. You know, you don't want to offend anybody. So, you know, it's a fine line in there. But, you know, if you can hit it, you're going to score well. You know, Master Judge George Good Firestone over here, he would bite through the chicken. Immediately he'd rip the skin off. He'd pull the other side apart, squeeze it, and see if it had juice in it. And that was important to him. You know, it had good flavor and everything. But he said he wanted to see the. To him, that was part of the texture, was to see that juice come out of that chicken.
Yeah, and that makes sense.
If you can get that, you're going to score good every time, because he said it just means the chicken's done right. It's cooked to perfection and all this other stuff. And you know, he said, yeah, if I get a little bit of juice, he said, that's okay. If I don't get any juice, he said, depending on the flavor, I might mark it down one. But he said, you know, me and several other master judges, once they want to see how juicy the meat is. Because like you said, they're trying to get through the sauce.
Right. So that's why we don't put a lot of sauce on stuff anymore. We used to set our sauce on, you know, when it was on the cooker. We've gotten almost completely away from that. I sauce everything in the trailer. And the reason is we used to sauce our ribs and then set them back on the cooker and set the sauce. And the ribs would taste different. I'd sauce them and take a bite of one, and then I'd put them on the cooker. And then when I got them back off, they'd taste different. And it took me a while to figure out that what smoke was in the cooker was interacting with the sugars in the sauce, and it was making it, you know, you get smoke and sugar mixing together. Sometimes it's not a good flavor. So all we do, and when we take it in the trailer and just do put a light sauce on it with the brush, it for one thing, it guarantees there's not a lot of sauce on there because it won't, you know, because you're not setting it on there. It's not going to hold much sauce, and then it doesn't change the flavor of it, especially if you're using, like, honey or something like that. Smoke will really radically change the flavor if it's in there for any length of time.
It gives it more stuff for the smoke to stick to, in other words.
Yeah. Well, I was going to tell you, one time we were on the East Coast cooking, and, you know, KCBS gives them a pretty good guideline on how to test things. You know, like brisket, if it's a slice, you pull it, and it should have a little bit of resistance and snap. I was talking to some judge, and they said, well, we test it. We put it on their plate, and we take a fork and flip it back on it, the slice on itself. If it flips back, it's underdone. They said if it flips over and breaks, then it's overdone. I was like, well, that's not a test that I've ever heard of. And, you know, that also depends on how thick the slice is. If the slice is a little thicker or a little thinner, I mean, no, they're hard to get them exactly. I mean, you know, I don't even get my slices exactly the same thickness every week to week. You know, I just try to get them the same. But, you know, you don't want these judges making their own test up. You know, and the KCBS has already got the guidelines set. And the other thing I tell you I'm real picky about, and we've seen this over the years, especially with some of the newer judges, or realistically, with judges that aren't, you know, that come off the street. And you run into contests where they don't have enough judges and they'll get them off the street. And that's with chicken. If you cook it on the smoker, like for a length of time at a low temperature, you'll get some of that pink meat, you know, on there. And in the judges' class, they tell them, they say, you know, that's natural, that smoke interacts with the meat and it makes a smoke ring. But, boy, you get some – there's a lot of people you know, if they haven't been trained right, they see anything pink on a piece of chicken, and they just – it turns them off. So that's why we cook our chicken so hot. We cook it, you know, real hot. Basically, we're grilling our chicken, and we don't end up with anything pink on it. And you get nice clear juices and everything. So I always feel a little better because we started out, that's what we would do. We just smoke our chicken and we'd get some pinkness to it. And I think there were some times when that hurt us.
Well, you know, they think it's automatically it's blood. You know, that's the first thing that's in their mind. It's underdone.
Yeah.
You know, Bubba back here in Franklin, North Carolina, that happened to him. And Bubba says, you know, he said, I cooked that till it was 187 or 190 degrees. There's no way. He said, I want the piece of chicken. They got a piece of chicken, and they squeezed it on that, and it was clear juice. But he was already DQ'd. You know, there's no rhyme or reason.
You know, that's the test they're supposed to do, and it's only if, you know, they take the white napkin. If there's bloody liquid coming out, then they can DQ you. But if it's clear, they're not supposed to DQ you. Actually, there's no rule that you even got to cook the meat. You know, you can turn it in raw. It's just that the judges don't have to eat it. If they refuse to eat it, then you don't get a score. But, I understand that happens, and that's why it's like don't give the judges an opportunity to think there's something wrong with it. So we got away from doing that. You know, we used to do a beer. When we started out, we were doing beer can chicken. I made I welded a piece of pipe, you know, about I was probably mention a quarter pipe or something, and on a plate, and we'd have two or three of them, and we'd stick chickens on there, and we'd do beer can chickens, and we'd turn in some white meat and some dark meat, and boy, you'd get some of that pink stuff down there around the bone or something, and sometimes the judges didn't like that, so we just got away from that. We just totally grill everything hot now.
Well, that beer can chicken is one of the best chicken you'll ever eat.
It is good, and I tell you, to this day, it's darn good. You know, sometimes it's hard to get that white meat and dark meat done at this, you know, the right time, get the right temperature. So that's kind of why we got away from it. We just cook everything separate if we can.
Yeah, like I said, when I did the FBA, I think I got fifth in chicken. I did a beer can chicken and pulled it from my face because there's no garnish in there, so you have to build up the boxes. And I told my neighbor, I said, well, if we go by weight, I said, I'm going to win it.
So you put pulled meat down the bottom, yeah.
Very lightly sausage, just kind of keep it moist till it got to the judging, you know. It was piping hot.
Yeah.
A little light sauce on it, mixed it up a little bit, stuck it in there, and I put thighs and wings in there.
Mm-hmm.
The FDA, I guess they like two different kinds of main meat, but then when they pull the wing or thigh out, they look, oh, I got some pulled in there. So,
yeah.
You know, scored fifth. I was less than 2 points out of first.
Yeah. We always enjoy doing contests where there's no garnish. You know, the best of the best was down in Douglas, Georgia, and then you moved it to Waycross, and then, of course, they're not going to have it this year, but there was no garnish there. And then we did, I think, the LPQ 1 year in Iowa where we cooked on a propane cooker, and there was no garnish there. And, you know, I'm one of them people we do garnish real well, but it's just we got to go out and buy $30 worth of lettuce and parsley, and then we end up throwing 90% of it away. And I kind of just wish, you know, if they, you know, do away with garnish in KCBS, and people go, well, you don't have to turn in. Well, I don't see people winning without it right now, you know. But if somebody starts winning regularly without garnish, then maybe we'll think about it. But we'll just keep doing it.
I know two teams this past weekend didn't do any garnish. So we're just going to see how we did. Out of 30 teams, they were in the 20s, so not too good.
I think that says it right there. And I admit it, it looks, you know, the teams that have been doing it for a long time that know how to do garnish really well, they do well. And it looks, the boxes look really nice. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You put that meat with the mahogany color on it, you lay it on that nice green bed of parsley, and God, it looks nice, and it makes it look more appetizing and everything. There's no doubt about it. But you know, like I say, we don't have a problem doing boxes without garnish. You know, all you got to do, like, is, well, people say, well, your chicken will slide around or something. It's like, you just take the extra thigh, cut a wedge out of it, and stick it up under there, and that'll, you know, hold stuff. Or like, if you got ribs, put some of the skinnier ribs underneath, and you jack stuff up. I mean, just use the other meat to make it, like you said, you took pulled chicken and made a bed out of it. That's a great way to do it.
I had to turn that baby back for one, and I had to flip the bottom rack upside down and get them to fit. So they were still both fit. You know how we usually stack them over one another?
Uh-huh.
They were still both. I couldn't fit them, so I flipped them upside down and flipped them back that way and got first place. I'm like, damn, that wasn't too bad.
There you go.
I think in the
MBN, you know, we've done one MBN contest, and you got to do a blind box, and you know they do that fancy judges cut where you take four bones and you cut on the inside of the first bone, on the inside of the fourth bone. That way you got a two bone segment with meat on both sides, and you know you got to try to get quite a few of those in the box. And I think to do that, I think they take them to a bandsaw and cut them down so they're shorter, so they can get like six or eight bones segments.
Yeah.
Of course, they don't worry about how they get them in the box, just the fact that they get them in there. And,
right.
So, you know, sometimes having a bandsaw handy is not a bad thing, you know, a meat saw.
Now, what kind of cookie do you cook on? Because I've seen you on, you know, Facebook and feel the...
We use a Peoria Custom Cooker. Bill Cusack owns a company. He's a dentist, but he likes to play around and design stuff, and he's built cookers all of his life. And he approached us back in, I think, 2006 six or five, we start talking, like at the end of five maybe. And he was building cookers that looked a lot like the Close cookers out of Texas. And at the time, I took, you know, I can do a little fabricating, and I took my Horizon, and I noticed, you know, we'd cook in cold weather and everything, and a lot of my heat was coming out the back. People would stand there and, you know, by my firebox, warm their hands up and stuff, and you know, the gear pits had insulated fireboxes, and I said, you know what, I'm going to insulate that firebox. And so I went over to the place where you buy steel and bought a bunch of steel, and I bought some kale wool, which is a ceramic insulation, you know, used in blast furnace, and I insulated my firebox. And I'm going to tell you what, when we start using it in 2004, I did it over the winter, and we were using 25% of the fuel we had been using. And immediately, 2004 is when we I think that year we won six contests, and it just cooked so much better with the insulation. And then so Bill approached me, and we talked about it. I said, well, you know, he wasn't building any insulated cookers at the time. I said, well, you know, I got an insulated cooker now, and I'd rather not switch. And he said, well, just, you know, sketch up what you want, and we'll build it. So he built me a totally insulated cooker, big firebox, which actually the fire itself is pretty small. It's 8 by 24, the spot where the fire is, and the rest of the firebox is hot oven. And we cook in there. You cook your chicken in there at 450 degrees. And the first one was round. We took a 24-inch tube and stuck it inside a 26-inch tube, and had insulation around it. And the trouble with doing that is your doors now have, you know, are 2 inches thick. And if you don't taper them all the way around, they can't have them straight up and down the sides, because then the inside will heat up and they'll stick. So it has to be tapered in, you know, 2 or 3 degrees. So we realized, well, he realized real quick that, you know, that wasn't going to work. The round ones were just too hard to build. So he's got a big metal brake, and he could bend them up, and so he started building the square rectangular ones. And they got one inch of insulation in the cook chamber and 2 inches in the firebox. And I, on a typical cook-off, I'll start mine up about 3 in the afternoon, and I might burn 25 pounds of charcoal. Now, in cold weather, I burn more, and I just burn charcoal, and I'll throw, you know, a handful of wood chunks in there once in a while, oak, normally. And they're good cookers, and we've been using it for a long time. I've got 3 of them. One we pull behind, you know, pull behind a motorhome or something, and then the other one's mounted on our trailer. And I know how to cook on them. You know, you can be cooking one thing at 450, another one at 310, and then on the bottom of the cooker, you can be cooking like pork at 210 degrees. So I've got it all figured out after all these years.
Well, it sounds like with the way you place and everything in these contests, it's, you know, and it goes to, you know, any of the newbies that are out there. It really doesn't matter what cooker you cook on, as long as you learn it. You know,
exactly.
You learn what spots are, your hot spots, your cold spots. And actually, to me, and this is my opinion, I don't know if it's yours, but I like the opportunity to have something that might be 15, 25 degrees hotter than the other, just in case you run into that rare opportunity where, you know, your big meats are hanging up, you need to get them done, or, you know, you're running behind on something because of what we call adversity. And so it gives you that opportunity to catch up on your cook or to slow down your cook. So
Yeah, like I say, we got a firebox, so I can throw stuff in there. And we cooked, we use it mostly for cooking steaks and stuff. The lady from, you know, we go together with a couple teams from, you know, down around us in the Kansas City area. There's like 4 or 5 of us go together, and we'll buy a bunch of Snake River Farm brisket. We'll get a pallet of it. And so we hit the lady up from Snake River for a couple prime ribs. So she brought them to the Royal, and I cooked a couple prime ribs there for Friday night, and we use that. I cook them in the firebox there at 450, get them done real quick, and boy, they turned out wonderful. But yeah, having that, you know, able to, if you get behind on something, be able to throw it in a hot spot, it makes a big difference. Also, my cooker's got 3 different smokestacks on it that you can open and close, so you can change the heat path. So what I do, I'll start out, like when it's cold, I'll start with the lowest one, and so the bottom of the cooker stays warm. And then, you know, come Saturday morning of a cook-off, you know, rather than have to throw my meat in the Cambro, I can just take my pork when it gets done and my brisket when it gets done. I can set it on the bottom of the cooker, and right in the lid of the cooker, I got a smokestack I can open so the path of the heat goes up, and it gets that bottom part where the pork and the brisket are stored down to about 170 degrees, which is just perfect for holding it. So, yeah, it's a pretty versatile cooker. You know, we do a lot of stuff. We cook pizza in it before. Like I said, we cook steaks, cook pork loin. Can't think of all the stuff we cooked there, but cook just about anything in it.
You know, that being said, too, I mean, it's good to have a smoker that cooks consistent. You know, when you need it, like you say, you should cook, you know, your big meats at a, say, like 215, 220 overnight.
Yeah.
You know, you really don't want, like, if you have a regular offset that's not insulated or whatever, you're going to be feeding the fire, and it's really hard to keep a constant temperature in there. You know, it's going to spike and then go down, spike and go down. And
yeah.
The more constant you cook that, you know, the better off you are. But, you know, I was talking about more towards the finishing side, where if you're running behind or whatever, you do have that option in the end.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's just another part of your arsenal that you have, that you have that opportunity or the chance to, you know, complete the cycle of cooking the meat where it needs to be.
Yeah. Yeah, we use a guru on it. You know, I go to bed and, you know, I don't have to worry about it. I know it's going to be right temperature all night. And although, I'll tell you what, this might have hurt us for the Invitational. We lost about 2 hours on our cook. The only thing that was on was pork, because I cook my pork slow. I cook everything else hot and fast. I just run my Guru probe in for the pit. I just lay it in there. I set, you know, I usually let the door down pretty easy. And we've been using the same probe for a couple years. And I probably dropped the door on it one too many times, and it quit working. And the pit lost temperature because it didn't know what, you know, it set over temp when the probe went bad. So we had to change that out. So that we screwed our pork up for the Invitational. It didn't turn out very good. I didn't get it done. But so I tried to speed it up in the morning. Well, I always cook my pulling pork and, you know, finish it off in foil. But my slicing pork, I just let it go, and we don't wrap it. So my pulling pork, as I put it back up in the hot spot, and my pulling pork got overdone, and the slicer wasn't done. So we ended up with not real. That kind of killed us. We got a 162 in pork, in the Invitational. And if we would have had a fairly good score, we'd been right up there. But you know, that happens. It, you know, everybody's got stories where something doesn't turn out, you know, and that happened to hit us on the Invitational.
Well, it's just kind of strange that, you know, two things you need to get done, one on each foot, neither one of them came through. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'll tell you, you know, like I said, I cook everything hot, brisket especially, and ribs. But I'll tell you the reason I cook pork slow. I've done it hot, but you know the muscles all have silver skin on them, and you want to get that off when you're turning it in your box. And I find if I cook it like at 210 all night long, and let's cook it slow, that when I start to separate those muscles, I can just take a paper towel and wipe that silver skin right off. Whereas if I cook it hot, the pork's done, it pulls right and everything, but the silver skin doesn't want to release. I have a hard time, so. To me, it's just a lot easier to cook the pork slow, and then it's a lot easier for me to, when I'm pulling that, you know, them little pieces of skin, you know, what, silver skin or whatever, you know, I think you know what I'm talking about. They're kind of translucent little white pieces that are stuck around the muscle. They just come off a lot easier.
Every section of meat's got it around it in the pulled pork. So
yeah, it does. And so, you know, and I'll tell you what, pork, for some reason, is, I guess because we're trying to do so much in the box, it just takes me longer than any of the other turn-ins. Chicken doesn't take long. We take it off the cooker, put it right in the box. Ribs, the same thing. I'll cut them up and put them in the box. They don't take very long. But pork, I got to start on that right when we turn ribs in, and I just work on it until my wife takes it and walks it in.
Well, it's kind of funny because, you know, pork's the same way as me is, you know, I don't know if this happens to you, but I'll get in there and have an idea how I want to do the pork box, and by the time I get done, it's totally different.
Yeah, both days at the Royal, we had to do them differently than what I wanted. My the first day, my money muscle wasn't quite there, And the second day, I overcooked the money muscle a little bit. So I'll tell you, I didn't have enough slices to make six. And so I got looking around. You got the one of them nice kind of round muscles that lays right on the blade bone. And I thought, well, I looked at it, and I go, well, you know, if I slice, we got a slicer, I run it through the slicer. And I said, well, I'm just going to run that through the slicer. And I took my scissors and kind of trimmed it up so it was about the same shape as, five money muscle slices I had. And it didn't have any bark on it, so I just kind of painted some sauce on it and kind of hid it there. But, I didn't want to turn just five slices of money muscle in because one of them judges gets cheated is going to not like that too well. So he got one of them got a slice of the different muscle, but I don't know if he noticed it or not, but you got to do that stuff on the fly. If you got to do what you got to do, and I trimmed it up to make it look the same shape, and it worked. We still got a 170 in pork for the open, so that's not too bad in that crowd.
Now, like you said, it's one of the things that the judges need to cook with you to see what you go through. You know, because like I said, a lot of times you got to think why you're doing it. And you know, a lot of teams will get flustered, but it's the teams that can kind of work through it are the ones that are going to come out on top every time.
Yeah.
Because your presentation is still going to be there. You just, like I said, you just engineered a new money muscle, I guess, but you do what you have to do. And to get the look that you want, get the flavor you want. You know, a lot of people add a lot of stuff at the end to kind of, rub my flavor in there, so I got to add a little bit of this or grind this down and sprinkle a little of this on and add a little of this sauce and, bring the flavor up to where I need it to be and everything. But you still got to please all six judges.
Yeah, there's been times, we always like to put burnt ends in. I remember one time I couldn't get a nice, I tried to put relatively square chunk, cubes, maybe like a half to three-quarter inch size cubes of burnt ends in. And I just couldn't get a nice cube, and the flat of the brisket that we separated, the skinny end of it was pretty soft. So I said, I just cut a cube out of that, and we sauced it up, and put it in there, and it was just as soft as the burnt or the point end of it. So I think we got away with that one too.
Like you said, what they won't know won't hurt them, right?
No, they don't. And we talked to, I talked to a lot of judges, and they, you talk to them, most of them know the difference between a loin back and a baby back, but there's a lot of newer judges that aren't quite sure. And because I always ask, I said, what'd you get more loin? And normally they get way more spare ribs than they do, but there's some of them that'll admit to you, they go, we're not really sure, And so that's what you run into sometimes.
Yeah, we sometimes try to outthink the judges. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't,
Yeah.
But there's so many variables in there. I mean, with the judges, with the new judges, the women judges, I think, pick up salt a lot easier than the men. Just talking to a few of them and stuff. But, we had two judges cook with us in Franklin. Having them come in, they had a whole new respect for it, for what we go through. And, I told her, and this may work for you too, is I said, if you give somebody a 7 or below or whatever, me personally, I'd like to have a comment card on why'd you give it a 7 when everybody else gave it a 9?
Yeah.
So you take those comment cards, some people say, oh, they're bitch cards or whatever. And I said, no, actually, if you go over a span of, 6 or 10 contests, you get comment cards, and you got four of them saying, like, a little too salty or a little too sweet or a little too spicy. Well, then, what you're doing wrong.
Right.
But when you get 7s and stuff, you're in flavor, you're like, all right, what is this? Done this, done that, got 7s here, got 7s there. No matter which way I turn, I get 7s. I need to know why, I'm getting eight. I want to know why.
So you can fix it.
This judge, she's a female. This judge, she says, I give it 7 or below, I'm going to give a comment card. Well, one contest, she gave 6 of them. And she gave one where she really liked the spicy, little spice on the chicken and stuff, wasn't too overglazed and all this other stuff. Tasted the chicken, but it had a nice little, afterbite. And really liked it, and she cooked with me, and she said, it tastes a lot like your chicken. And I said, really? Well, it was Team Mistress, Midnight Burn, who got the comment card. Well, we both went to the same school.
Huh.
All flavor profiles are right there by one another. So.
Yeah.
Got a Kyler card. I mean, they finished strong in chicken that day. I think I got them in chicken, but anyway, they did get her card, and they like that, and you know that's something for them to work on.
Yeah.
You know, when you get I got a comment card this past weekend on my ribs. I finished sixth in ribs, and one of the judges put on there, "I would travel a lot of miles to buy your ribs. They were that good." That's exactly how he put it.
Good deal.
And then you give me, then you get two other judges give you 888.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I tell you, I was, you know, I know sometimes people get carried away with cayenne or chipotle or something. We use it on our ribs and we use it on our brisket. And I always say, you know, go real light on that stuff because there are people that are real sensitive and boy, they get a little bit of heat and it bothers them. So, you know, sweet is always better than heat. I remember we cooked out in Las Vegas in 2003 and the team next to us was from Southern California. I don't even know if they still cook or not, but he let me try some of his sauce, and it was just heat. And I said, well, you know, I kind of like hot stuff, but I said, what do you use this for? And he goes, well, I put it on my ribs. I go, you don't turn that in, do you? And he goes, oh, yeah. I go, oh, man. He goes, well, you know, we're here in Vegas. He goes, they like heat out here in the Midwest. I go, well, the problem is I know about half these judges, and they're from Tennessee, they're from Iowa, they're from Missouri and Kansas. I said, they flew out here, and I said, they're not going to like it. And when we saw his results in ribs, I think it was about second from the bottom. You know, you just can't have stuff overwhelming. You know, a little bit of heat is fine. And I think most of us use a little bit, you know, just so you catch it on the backside. But, man, you just can't have it. And, you know, then you sabotage your fellow cooks. You know, if that second rib they eat is burning their mouth, they're not tasting the third and fourth rib at all. You're ripping them guys off.
It's not like Jamie Gear did that.
Yeah, he did. I was just talking to Jamie this weekend. He was, you know, Rod Gray was in Pit Masters. And he had a busy schedule. Now Jamie helped him a little bit there because Jamie wasn't cooking. So, yeah. But, yeah, Jamie did that in that one Pit Masters episode where they were cooking down at down in Texas.
Yeah, Rod Gray was my mentor. So, I really
he does a good class. I hear most of people, I've never taken his class, but a lot of people that have taken him and Johnny's class, I guess they don't do classes together anymore, but everybody seems to like Rod's class, and I think they feel they get their money's worth. The only class I ever took was Ray Lampe's back in beginning of 2004. And, you know, I still talk to Ray, you know, off and on. You know, at contests, and so I'm just talking from this weekend. You know, he did a real basic class, but, you know, Ray had been cooking for a long time before we started, and, you know, it was stuff, it was, some of it was simple, but it was stuff you never, you know, you didn't think about at the time. And, you know, Ray was doing stuff that nobody else, you know, was doing at the time. And I'll tell you what, I'll tell you who took that class. Rod Gray took it. Darren Worth, Iowa Smoky D's, we took it. And there, I think there were several other good, you know, teams that went on to, you know, really, you know, be at the top of the game. And so there was something there about that class that, you know, there was something about it. It was a good class.
Well, Rob was very methodical. First year they had a banjo because he was in North Coast, and that was the year that I did five contests. And he was actually cooking next to us. And, you know, I was a newbie. I didn't know who he was. I knew who Johnny Trigg was. Tuffy was behind us. You know, I was kind of in the corner with all them because we were close to turn it, but we were bending. And so I was just talking to Rob Gray, you know, over his Green Lightning banner and stuff, and kind of struck up a friendship. And he comes over that night. You know, I was doing my boxes, and he just got to it. He's very methodical on his timeline. You know, well, I got 15 minutes to spare. So he comes over and he brings over these two heads of parsley that look like two rose bouquets. I mean, these things were huge. I'm like, where did you get those on? He goes, I got a buddy at the farmer's market. I said, we can put all of our farmer's market parsley together and make one of them heads.
Yeah.
So anyway, he brings over and goes, and he was kind of looking, he said, Michael, watch your box. I said, no, I'm sure you're going to find something wrong. He's looking at it, well, yeah, blah, blah, blah. He said, And he didn't say you're doing it wrong, but he said, this is what I would do. And he goes over, reaches in there, grabs a big old clump of parsley, rips off, sticks in the corner. Gee, there's a quarter of your box done right there.
Yeah.
So he kind of showed me how to do my box. And we got to talk, and I think we got the pork or whatever, and he said, he comes over, he looks at it, he says, well, you might need to do a little bit of this and that. So I did a little bit of it. He goes, now it's a good-looking box. He said, if your flavor's there, you'll score well. Well, I scored ninth. I beat him in pork. And I think he was 10th or 11th. And I said, damn, that says something. Of course, I thanked and everything else. But I called him. He gave me his number and everything. So if you got any questions, give me a call. And we help him pack up. Then he comes over there in the pouring down rain trying to help us pack up. I said, Rod, we live 15 miles from here. You got a day-and-a-half trip. Get your ass in your truck and go on home. We got this. Well, you help me and Johnny load up. And I had some guys, I'm a landscape company, so I had some guys over there with me, and, they all helped them load up. Well, they got loaded up in like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I told them to get out of there, so they got out. And I called him, a few weeks later. I was thanking him something. And he went through just about all of his competition notes. I mean, right there on the phone with me. I said, look, I'll pay you for them, whatever. He said, no. He said, somebody helped me out. So he said, I feel like, you're pretty passionate about competing. So he said, I'll help you out. So I told him that year, I said, look, if you ever come to anywhere near me, I'm going to take your class. I'll promise you that. The closest one he had was Hammond, Louisiana last year. So I drove 10 hours down to Louisiana, took his and Johnny's class, came back that Saturday afterwards, got back in about 2 o'clock. My wife was raising hell at me for driving all the way back, but I did. And then what does he do this year? At the Banjo-Vecue, which is now a mile from my house. He has the class up there at the beer distributor, which is a mile and a half from my house. And he called me.
Well, you got to spend some time in Hammond, which is a nice place.
Oh, it is. Don't get me wrong. But, I'd rather have been, sleep in my own bed. And, but he did a class up here. And he did on kind of short notice, too. So he didn't have a really full class. So the people who took it actually got, almost a hands-on type thing.
Yeah.
But he called me up and asked me if I had a problem with it. I said, no. He said, well, he wouldn't ask my permission. He just let me know he was doing it. And, I would love to help him do it, but I had a big contest in Tryon, North Carolina. And he said, look, he was asking me to help him with it. And he said, normally, he said, I don't ask another team or whatever, but he said, you're more welcome to come over and help me so I could use it. And, with everything that's going with Sherry and everything at that time, because it was in the beginning of June.
Oh, yeah.
And so when I told him that, he says, look, he said, I will never, ever ask another team not to go do a competition to help me do a class. And he said, I keep up with a lot of my students. He says, you're one of the ones that I keep up with. And he said, you do really, really well in North Carolina. He said, you need to go do that contest. So I went up and I did it. I got a second place rib up there out of 80,000 something teams up there. But anyway.
Yeah, it's a tough contest.
I pulled 16th out overall up there. But, my ribs got second, which helped me in the Smithfield Rib Series and all that. But,
yeah.
It was good for him to call. I call him a true friend. I can call him up and we'll chit chat. We went over a few months ago about what I was doing, what he was doing and everything, and how certain sauces were doing and all this other stuff. So I think he kind of likes, if we come up with something that we're really hitting on, I'd let him know in a heartbeat. I mean, he let me know what he was doing, so it's kind of a mutual respect there. If I see what he's not doing a whole lot, I'll call him up and say, hey, this is what's hitting for me right here. If you want to try it, do a practice cook or whatever, and see if it works for you out there.
Yeah.
But, I did go back to, I think Butcher Barbecue might sponsor y'all too. I went back to Butcher Barbecue injections and stuff in the middle of August. And especially on my brisket, I've got 2 firsts, a fourth, actually 3 firsts, a fourth, and a 11th since I've been using his.
Huh. No, we don't use Butcher, so we don't use Cosmo. We make our own brisket injection. We always have. So we've changed it a couple times over the years, but... one thing impressing me about Rod is how clean he stays when he cooks. I don't know how he does it. I'm telling you what, I'm like a dirt magnet. I'll start cooking, and I'll be, you know, I'll have an apron on and everything, and I'll just be black before it's over. I have dirt from head to toe. And it's because I lean against everything.
Yeah.
And Rod is, he's able to, like, just do everything pretty much with one hand or something, and he just never seems to get a drop on him. So I don't know how he does it. There's some people that can do that and some that can't, and I'm like a dirt magnet.
Well, he's just so methodical. I mean, it makes you sick because one ain't gets off on you, so I didn't put any on me. You know, and I had another team take his class up there, and they were looking at him doing chicken and stuff. He did his chicken, put it in the box, did no one, Gallatin said, "You don't scrape your skin?" He looked over and showed him, "Did you see me scrape my skin?" I mean, he's like, you know, he's not trying to be a smart ass or anything, but it comes out kind of like that, you know? He's like, "Well, did you see me do it?" "No." "All right, then. What? You answered your own question." But he is, he's just, you know, he's got everything on the timeline. And I guess that's the big thing with me is I'm like you. You know, when I'm doing rubs or, you know, doing the finished prep on my meats or whatever, I've got an apron on. And my wife says every time when I get through just doing that aspect of it, she's ready to throw the apron away.
Yeah.
So there's no get all that crap out of that apron.
We got a hold of some disposable aprons. They're plastic, you know, kind of clear. And they're only about $1 a piece. I think I bought 100 of them. And I've been using them again. But the problem is if you use them like this, you know, in the summer, it's so darn hot, you just sweat like a pig in them, you know. And but now once the weather gets cool, you wear them, and they're not too bad and everything. But, you know, it's easier to throw them away than to keep, you know. Because I'll tell you what, after you get an apron greasy so many times, it's hard to get all that grease out.
Yeah, it is.
We're talking let me think what we were talking about. Oh, timeline.
Yeah.
This is like when I help teach Scotty's class, that's a thing I try to impress on people. It's like Johnny Trigg or me or Rod. We do this almost every weekend. The timing of our meat is never the problem. You know, it's tweaking it, getting everything exactly right. When you cook only once or twice or three times a year, you're not only worried about getting the flavors right, you're worried about getting the timing right. You don't want to get that chicken done an hour ahead of time, or your brisket, you don't want it getting done at that 4 in the morning or something like that. And, you know, we go down right to the second. Like, we put our chicken on our hot grill, you know, like exactly on the minute. I take it off exactly on the minute. We just know exactly when to do it. And the better teams, I know Tuffy has he prints a timeline off on his. And, boy, that's the way to do it. You got to get your timing right. And once you get your timing down, and the way to do that is to cook, you know, I tell people, I said, you know what, when we first start the class, I say, you guys want to know the secret to being a good barbecue cook competition-wise? They all say yes. I go, I'm going to tell you what. You cook every weekend, and you'll get damn good at it.
Yep.
And it's because the more you do it, the better you get your timing down.
Well, that too. And then, you know, if you have adversity in your backyard, then you know how to handle it in the competition.
That's correct.
You know, because depending on altitude, depending on your humidity, depending on, you know, the weather total, you know, your grill's going to act a little bit different here and there.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what grill it is or what smoker it is, you know, you may be off a couple of minutes, whatever, but at least you know in certain areas or how your grill's going to react in these certain areas. The only way you can do that is, like you say, you cook just about every weekend. I have the benefit of us owning a sandwich shop where I cook briskets on for Fridays for my wife, and then I do butts for at least, you know, once or twice a week. So I can use the customers as guinea pigs because I can trim the butts however I want to. You know, I can season them however I want to, and then when they come off, I can let them rest for however long I want to and see how they react certain ways and see how, you know, different rubs react together or different smokes or different sauces or whatever. So, yeah, in reality, I'm doing, you know, two cooks a week, 52 weeks a year, and which really, I guess, keeps me on my game. Sometimes it gets a little overwhelming, but, you know, but like you said, you have to learn your cooker. The only way you can do that is consistently cook on it.
Yep.
Well, last year I competed on green eggs, and I did very well on green eggs. This year I want to get a little bit more sleep, so I went to, I've got a Memphis pellet smoker. You probably heard of those.
Uh-huh.
And I've got a Southern Q TNT, which is a gravity-fed smoker that you put a guru on, and it works pretty much the same way. I mean, you just set it and forget it. And like you said, if you know the time they'll give me, I've got mine down where I can get 6 hours of sleep. When I put my biscuit, I'll put them on at the same time. I know those two meats in my cookers will be within 3 degrees of one another.
Yeah.
At 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
They're right at where I need to wrap or whatever. Now, sometimes the brisket will hang up a little bit, you know, with that plateauing, which is no big deal because still got plenty of time to get it done. But, you know, I don't panic. You know, I just wait for it to get the color I want and the temperature I want. Then I wrap it. I've got two different grills I could put it in.
Uh-huh.
So both at the same temperature, and, you know, they both pretty much sit the same. But I think my TNT has a little bit more moisture in it than what my Memphis does. I think Memphis is a little bit dry heat. So I know I get a better bark on my big meats if I put them in there.
Yeah. The last trailer we had was a stump trailer. And it had, when I bought it from my buddy Pear, it had two stumps on it. And then I was waiting for Peoria Custom Cookers to build me a cookers to put on the trailer. And so I used stumps for a while in competition, and we won, I think, 3 contests with stumps, and they're basically the same thing you got there with the TNT, and real moist environment, you know, very little airflow through them, just nice cookers, you know, any of those gravity. Now there's a guy down here in St. Louis building a Rebel cooker, which is gravity feed. Bill Cusack, Peoria Custom Cookers, they build they take that gravity feed firebox thing and put it right inside of a cooker. They call it the Meat Monster internal firebox. And, you know, you've got it. Basically, you've got it like a stomp or a TNT turned on its side, and it works really well. So those are kind of really a lot of people are picking up on those and using those kind of gravity feed cookers now. And, boy, there's certainly nothing wrong with them. They certainly work well. And I still got a couple stumps in the barn I use occasionally. But, yeah, those are good cookers.
Yeah, they're just real easy and simple, you know. Mm-hmm. Lay a couple wood chunks in the ash pot down in the bottom and check a little bit of hot ash on. They get to smoking. And, like I said, I think it's a little moisture environment. And if you stay away from hickory or whatever, it's really hard to over-smoke your meat.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really good. And like TNTs, you know, they're around $2,800, which is cheaper than a stove. But,
yeah,
you know, to get started in this and to get a quality cooker, you cook all 4 meats in there, you know, for $2,500 for a cooker, that's almost unheard of
to
have a quality cooker like that. So, you know, you don't have to spend $10,000 to get into this thing.
No. Actually, there's probably been more contests won on Weber Smoky Mountain bullets than any other cooker, just because so many people have them, you know, and have used them over the years. And so, you know, you don't need an expensive cooker to compete in this competition. Like I say, Weber Smoky Mountains are, what, a couple $100 or $250 or something like that. And, you know, you can go a long ways with those. You get 2 or 3 of those, you can cook everything on them.
Kind of funny you said that, because I was just thinking about Scott Burke from Southport. We saw him up in Rome. You know, I know you're going to World Food Championships. We're trying to go. We're just trying to get some funds up to go. But Scott said, hey, we're just going to fly out there. I'm going to put my injections and blah, 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 and all this other stuff in the crate. We'll put it on the airplane with us, and he's going to each take one bag, and, you know, I have my knives and all that stuff in there. But he said, hey, when we get out there, you know, we'll buy our charcoal out there. We'll do this and do that. But he said, I've gone online and got a distributor out there that's going to bring me 2, you know, Smoky Mountains.
Yeah.
And he said, I'll cook them, use them out there. And he said, I'll sell them to people for, you know, $150 a piece. You know?
Yeah.
And everything I got right there and come on back home.
Yeah.
Originally,
we were planning on doing the 2 Georgia contests. You know, I forget what the first one's and the second one's coming, Georgia, which we cooked last year. And it was a real nice contest. We really enjoyed it. But with this, and I'm still not sure, the world food thing, you know, there's still some rules and stuff that we're a little leery of, but we're still, you know, confused about on, like, if you make the final table, you know, are the rules different, you know, or whatever. But we're going out there. And so since we're going out there, that's a big commitment, and we're going to take our trailer out. We're just going to stay out there and do Laughlin, Nevada, the next weekend. And that way we get two contests in a row. You know, we don't – because I sure as heck didn't want to go all the way out to Vegas and then the next week come back and try to do Cummings. That's just going from one end of the country to another. That's just too much driving. So we'll come back. We'll take 2 weeks off and eat our Thanksgiving dinner, and then the next week after that we go down to Demopolis, Alabama, which is that's just a wonderful contest. It's kind of cold down there usually, but it's a good contest. That'll be our last one of the year. And so we got three more point-paying contests. We got Libertyville, Illinois. That'll be about 50 teams. I think Laughlin's going to be about 50, and Demopolis will be 40-something teams, and we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, well, I think I met you last year in Canton.
Canton, Georgia. We were there, yeah. We were down there chasing, you know, the last 2 years, 2010 and 11, we chased all over the country for the Kingsford Points Chase. And, you know, to win that $25,000 at the end of the year. Well, they changed it this year. There's no year-end award. So what they're doing, and we just won some Kingsford money here at the Open. If you win a category using Kingsford, or if you're grand or reserve using Kingsford, you get an award, a cash award, and then they give you a bunch of Kingsford hats and shirts, and I think they had some belt buckles for the grand champion and stuff like that. So, yeah, they changed it around a little bit, but they still were giving $40,000 away. And so that's why we were down there last year. That was a nice contest, and I understand that it got canceled this year.
Yeah, the logistics were great. I mean, it was way up here that the biggest complaint we had was that the sites were too big. You know, it was too spread out. And we just organized kind of figured that out. Not, you know, we were just kind of getting with him. He was asking everybody's opinion on how big the sites need to be. I mean, they were 40 feet wide by 50, 60 foot deep. And you're like, good Lord, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, 20 feet's about as wide as you need to go normally. You can go as deep as you want, but, you know, when you start going so wide, like 40 feet, then you're really starting to spread people out. But, yeah, if you go 20 feet wide or so, that's not too bad of a deal. Then you can – everybody's a little closer.
It was up there, didn't you? It was like a half mile down the power line.
That's yeah, we were up. Down there a ways, and because my wife runs the turn-in, so it didn't matter to me.
Yeah,
and you know, have you ever been to the Royal?
No, I have not.
Well, there's some of them spots that are a good 10-minute walk.
Yeah.
And that's one way. So if you figure you better have, if you're way out there in the boondocks, you better have at least one or two good runners for you, and one person getting everything in the box. And boy, I tell you, you do four turn-ins that are 20 minutes round trip. I'll tell you what, that's a lot of walking.
You know, I had to beat Tuffy last year for my first grand ever up in Greer, and me and him were on the end, and it was about 160, 180 yards before you got to the end of the cookers. Then you had about another 200 yards across railroad track, and then you were about 50 yards from there to the turn-in. And the most disheartening thing you could ever see, and you can back me up on this because I know you compete against Tuffy a lot, is when I wanted to go turn my chicken box in, he was almost back to his camper. It's not like, holy crap, all that late.
Tuffy's usually the last, you know, we saw him from, he was right next to us at the Royal, and my wife walks in early because she don't want to be rushed, and I think it was 3.5 minute leisure, you know, a 3.5 minute walk from where we were, and Tuffy took off when he had about 3 minutes left to go. But I tell you, he sprints.
Yeah.
And he makes it with plenty of time. Although there's been times, I think, you know, one time down in Lakeland he didn't make it. But I don't know why he pushes. His dad even gets mad at him for pushing it like that. But
he said, no, I'm early. You're good. And
normally he's the last one to turn in.
Well, what's funny was by the time we got to Brisket, I was walking back, and he was running. I'm like, so
yeah, that's real
back.
Typical in Brisket for Tuffy. He likes to sprint.
He said he likes turning right at the end because he wants his brisket hot as it can be.
Yeah.
And as soon as they hit that thing, they take it back to the judges and they judge. And I understand that, but, you know, dude, man, it costs you a grand down there in Lakeland.
Well, it cost them a grand champion. Plus, it cost them probably about whatever the prize money was, probably about at least a couple $1,000s. But, yeah, well, I understand what he's saying. You know how brisket dries out so quick. He's getting his meat in there. It's moist. It's hot, you know, and hopefully it pays off for him because, you know, they're waiting on him.
Yeah, well, he told me, he said, after pork turning, he said, I think you got this one. I thought he was kicking my ass all year. I said, why do you think I got it? He goes, I don't know. I said, you have it that bad of a cook? He goes, no, I'm having a pretty good cook. So my chicken a little bit off or whatever. And he said, I just think you've got this one. You've been coming really close. And he called it. But he beat me in .0002.
Yep, that's the minimum. That's the least amount you can get beat by is 0.2. We won our first grand champion by 0.2, and yeah, I'd rather lose by 10 points than 0.2, because man, when you're that close, it's like what did I do wrong, you know?
Where the hell did that score come from, or you know, how did I do that? But you know, with him being there, you know, I had a first in chicken, I had a second in brisket, I had a third in pork, and I had a seventh in ribs. And he started off like a seventh in chicken, then he reeled off, you know, like a second in pork, then he had that first in brisket, then I forgot what he had in ribs, like a fifth in ribs or something. And, you know, everybody knew it was between two of us. Well, I beat him by just under 3 points total.
Yeah.
But we beat the field by he beat the rest of the field by 17 points.
Yeah.
And I went straight to Myrtle Beach after that. And won the SBN, which is a two-meet contest, won that. That took Grant into KCBS, and I beat the rest of the field by 21 points.
Now, is that the one that had all the trouble, that Myrtle Beach one?
Yeah, I was part of the one that had all the trouble.
were they going to arrest you or something?
Yeah, that was Roger from Pickle Porkers. They were going to arrest because they said he dumped his Blackwater there, and he didn't. You know, at the meeting, you know, we're in a field. Off the edge of a weeded football field, so to speak. They didn't cut the grass. They just had 5 inches of rain on Wednesday. And they were saying that Roger intentionally tore up his spot. Roger's got a big RV. And actually, when he was just pulling it in there, he got stuck. They had to pull him out. So it was all because he was venting out barbecue on Sunday when he wasn't supposed to, and he'd already cleared up somebody to do it. Anyway, it's just big. The whole thing was just a lack of communication between the organizers and the cookers, but I went to go turn in my brisket box. So I always turn in my brisket. My wife runs everything else. And when I turned it in, Tina's right there, and she goes, we don't have a pork box for you. And I said, excuse me? She goes, we didn't get a pork box from you. I said, you better craft one out pretty quick, because I said, I know we turned it in. And, you know, during brisket turning, so I don't want to make a scene. And I went back to the trailer. And people saw me going back to the trailer and everybody saw me said I was redder and redder and redder. I was furious. And I got back to the trailer, and I couldn't sit still, and I was pacing back and forth, and I went back up there. And Mickey had gone over there. They kept the boxes in the categories, you know?
Yeah.
They put a sticker from an anything but category on my box. They found my box.
Oh.
Been judged under the other number, which is okay. I just want to make sure it's judged.
So they had your scores. They just had to get it to the right number.
Not the right. Well, I've been hit pretty hard in ribs, and I know who's cooking that event. You know, there's 15, you know, quality teams down there. I'll put it that way. Out of 37, there's 15 quality teams, and I got 27th in ribs. So I'm thinking, you know, the pork. I'm thinking. They had to switch my red box with somebody. Because I got in the first in the SBN event, and I beat everybody by like 3 or 4 points. And it was the same ribs. I mean, it was just, you know,
same.
So it makes you wonder on that. But I got reserve grand down there. But, yeah, that was a fiasco down there. We, a lot of teams down, a lot of good teams, you know, people think, oh, they're bitching because they didn't score well. No, a lot of teams that got first and seconds and everything were, you know, bitching, complaining about how it was run.
Yeah, Danny won that, didn't he? Danny Kugel?
Danny won, and I got reserve, and Bubba got third.
Yeah. But, I know Bubba, I think he was griping about it afterwards, or I think a couple people were. I didn't talk to Danny about it. I was talking to Danny at the Royal this weekend. We run into him every once in a while.
That's good. Like I told Danny, and Danny cooks in a lot of competitions that I do.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're thing, and I look at him. So Danny, I said, you know, I could be around you, but I said, I just got to take you in small doses.
Yeah, that's Danny.
And, you know, I mean, everyone knows, you know, who's been around Danny at least once knows Danny. And, you know, he can be good as gold, or he can I like to say, run his mouth, but he can talk a lot. And just in that mood, it's like, okay, it's time to turn him off, you know. But he's actually been a lot better than he was beginning of this year or the end of last year.
Yeah.
And so I think he's matured a little bit. Like I said, Danny's good as gold. You know, Danny's
got a good heart.
He does. He'll do just about anything for you. If you're in a thing, he'll find some way to help you out. You know, but he's toned it down a little bit, you know, since Randall's been sponsoring him with his new smoker and stuff. And you know, he's got a little bit better profile amongst teams. But, you know, Danny's always going to be Danny.
Yeah, he started out the beginning of the year. He was really he was hitting it pretty well. And then, you know, there's – well, like is it two old men and a grill? They beginning of the year, they were on fire. And, you know, boy, you get those streaks, you just got to ride them out and, because they always end for some reason.
Yeah,
and I just don't know how to explain that. You can cook the same all year, and one part of the year you might be on fire, and then another part of the year you just can't hit nothing. So I don't know how to – and I've been cooking 12 years. I still don't know how to explain that.
Well, mine always comes around August, whatever. I'll usually flop in the summer for some reason.
Yeah, we kind of do too. We didn't win a single contest. We had two reserves early in the year down in Pensacola and then Mobile, and then we didn't win a contest till June. And then here lately, in the last 8 or 9 contests, I think we won 5 of them. So we just start coming on here at the end. But we kind of switched around. Like I said, beginning of the year, we were using loin back ribs, and we were doing chicken legs, and we switched, and finally we got caught back up, and a brisket had been hitting all year, so that wasn't a problem. But, sometimes if something ain't working, you just got to switch.
Yeah, like the, everybody tweets a recipe or, you know, like you say, you use a different type of meat, you know, depending on, you know, your chicken or your ribs or whatever. And, that's what's so important is good teams are going to, you know, they're going to adjust. They're going to tweak, and they're going to keep doing it, and, you know, the thing about a good team is you can do enough cooks a year, so if you tweak it one way and you really bomb, then you know which way you need to take it. And especially without the comment cards the judge is given. Now, in SPN, you get a comment card from just about every judge, which is what I like.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll tell you how good it is or how bad it is or why it might have been a little bit off or whatever. So, you know, take it with a grain of sand, you kind of see the judge, and then Harvey Hemrick, I don't know if you know him.
I know Harvey, yeah.
Well, he's actually gotten back into judging. He was up in Union when I won my grand up there, Union, South Carolina, and he was judging SBN, and I'd really love for SBN to take him in and help him organize some of these events. The one up there in Union was organized perfect to a T. It was just as good as Cummins last year. I mean, he had that, and they've been doing this for, you know, 15, 18 years up there. They've had South Carolina. They've had KCBS up there. But David Owens has really found his niche with the SBN up there. It doesn't cost him an arm and a leg, and they get a lot of good teams up there. I think we had like 35 teams up there. So it's in a small town. The whole community comes out and supports it. I mean, it's a great little venue up there. And I took first and people's choice, which to me is usually the kiss of death, you know.
Yeah.
I turned around, took first and pork, and everybody's like, that don't happen. You know, usually first people's choice is 25th and pork.
Yeah.
So I took first and pork, took second and ribs, second and chicken, and grand champion. Well, I took over half the prize money, and people are like, what the hell just happened, you know? Like, well, this is part where it's my 15 minutes of fame this year, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, I came, kicked butt, and I left, and got a T-shirt. like you said, it's one of those things where when you're hitting, you know, ride as long as you can, enjoy as long as you can, because you are coming back down. And
yeah.
it's just a matter of time.
Are you in North Carolina?
Well, I'm out of Augusta, Georgia, actually.
Augusta, Georgia, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I can get South Carolina, North Carolina, and Georgia pretty easy. There's a lot of teams that I compete against are in the Atlanta area. So
yeah.
They hit Alabama, Tennessee, they'll venture into South Carolina, North Carolina.
Yeah.
Saw you up at Greenwood last year, which when you were talking about how hot it is and everything, you can't get any hotter than that contest.
We cooked Greenwood and
and Canton.
I think we cooked it last year, yeah. Or was it? No,
yeah,
we cooked it last year.
Yeah, you got reserve.
We got reserve behind Mike, and we figured out we were leading going into brisket, and I think we got sixth, and I think Mike got first in brisket, and we were still using Walmart and Sam's briskets at the time, and we started out we always used those. I know a lot of people had been using Wagyu and stuff, and anyway, so it got to where we just couldn't hit in brisket. So finally, in September, we switched over September last year, and. We never looked back, you know. So the Wagyus, they turn out a little bit better. But you're talking about Greenwood, that it was, I think, 98 degrees and about 100% humidity, and you just walked out of the trailer. And luckily we had good electricity and the air conditioner. When we were inside, we were cool. But, well, when you walked out, you were just drenched from sweat. And that one, and then we cooked last year, because of the Sam's, because of the Kingsford we were chasing, we did our Sam's clubs down in Texas. We did Austin as our local, and then we made it out of there, and we went to our regional in Fort Worth, Texas. Now, this is Fort Worth, Texas, July 15th of last year. And I'm going to tell you what, they set a record last year. I think they had 45 days above 100, something like that. And in that Sam's parking lot, which is all blacktop, you take your thermal pen, you just hold it out in the air, and it read 118 degrees. If you set it on the ground, it read anywhere from 126 to 138. And I tell you what, I don't know how people live in Texas. It was horrible. We're in Illinois, and it gets hot up here, and it's humid and stuff. But Texas, it was like an inferno. I don't know how you come out of your car, you know, to go to a store or anything. It was killer hot. And then, when we're done cooking, you're wore out. The heat just wears you out. And then I got to stick my head in the cooker and clean it out, clean the grease out, and clean the ashes out. And, of course, the cooker's still about 250 degrees, and you got your head in there. I told my wife, I said, keep an eye on me in case I pass out, you know.
Well, that's just it. You know, it's already hot, and that cooker's not going to cool off anytime soon.
That's right.
It's just radiating heat, too. So, you know, it's just keeping that temperature on up.
That's right, and, like this time, you know, the Royal was really cold. It was, I think the high Saturday was 63, and it was, 53, I take that back. It was 53 was the high, and it was cloudy all day, and it was really cold. Then Sunday, it got to like 56, but it was sunny, so it wasn't as bad. But, the teams are just cooking in easy ups, you know, and they're out there for two contests, and, well, that takes a lot out of you, too, being cold like that, cold and it was damp. It didn't rain or anything, but it was just, cold and damp, and the wind was blowing. It's nice to have a trailer when the weather conditions are like that.
Yeah, it is. I've done several contests. I did one here in Augusta. It was an SBN, and it was in February, and wind was blowing about 30 miles an hour, and it was about, I think, high on the day was like 63 degrees. So, I cranked up my TNT in my Memphis, and I went to bed, and the organizer, Greg, who's one of my sponsors, he was out in the infield. We were doing it in the baseball field. He got screen jackets, and he was in a little tent, and he had to stay down, but it started raining and all sorts of stuff, and he said, I about came in your trailer, and you about had a bunk mate. You know, I always carry a fold-out, like a cot or whatever, for whoever wants to stay in there. And I told him I had room, and I got up next morning, everybody's picking up their crap and all this stuff. So what happened? So you didn't get rain on anything? I went, it rained?
Yeah.
Like, you suck. But
yeah.
My little Walmart heater.
Go ahead.
I was I had my little Walmart heater in my trailer. I was nice and toasty. And it was fun.
Yeah, we got, we got a heat strip with our air conditioner, but it blows air, you know, when you got that on. So we just go in the little, like, the $20 ceramic heater, and it heats our trailer up real nice. I remember a few years ago we were using a motorhome, and we were out in Nelsonville, Ohio, and for some reason that contest, it's always the week before the Jack. And colder than hell always. It's always raining. And it got down to about in the low 30s. And, my buddy Parrott, he drove all the way from South Dakota out there, and he's cooking. And in the middle of the night, I get up to check on something, and I walk out, and I got a T-shirt on, and I'm steaming. You know, my body's just steaming. And he's out there with a mummy sleeping bag with just his nose sticking out. And I go over and wake him up, say, you know, see if he's okay and everything. And I tell him, I said, and I had to get out of that motorhome. I was getting too hot, you know. He just about killed me because he's froze to death sitting there in that sleeping bag.
He's like, kiss my ass.
Yeah. Yeah, you know how it is. You know, making fun of him because he's sleeping. He had an easy up and a sleeping bag, and that's all he had. And it was cold. It was a wet cold, too, which will really go right through you.
That's what it's called, bone cold. Nothing really functions properly. I mean, your fingers don't function. Your brain doesn't function. We've all been there and done that. If you put your time in, you're gonna have a lot of same experiences that all these other teams are having now that are just starting off. And it's like, you know, it kind of brings back memories. I'm not going to say all good memories, but kind of brings back memories of where you started. And it, to me, it makes me appreciate where I'm at today, even though I'm not really big time or anything, but just, you know, just having an enclosed trailer and stuff to work out of, it just makes a big difference to me.
Does make a huge difference to have a trailer. Trailer or a motorhome or something like that so you can get in and out of the weather. And plus, you can keep your meat warm. When you're in an easy up, boy, it's hard to keep your meat warm, especially if that wind's howling and stuff. It's tough.
It's tough through anything. So, I mean, it's like you said, I think it's helped my score since I got my trailer and stuff. And, I just like having it there. You know, it's like my little home. I mean, it started off just being a regular car hauler, gooseneck car hauler. So we got our bed up in the gooseneck part, got a fridge, and we don't have a bathroom in or anything, but we've got cabinets and the fridge and sink and all that, the hot water and, you know, heaters and air conditioners and all that stuff. So, I mean, it's just really nice. You know, we take our little dog with us sometimes. He has a good time. And, we always stress that a lot of these contests, you know, it's all about family. You got new family out on the road and extended family. And, you know, go to a lot of these contests, you know, we go just to see who's going to, you know, we know who's going to be there and we haven't seen them in a while. Well, let's go do this one since we ain't seen them in a while. You know, so I know y'all are chasing points a lot, but we're kind of chasing friends and sticking within. Roughly, I can do between all four different sectioning bodies, I can do about 35 contests a year within 3 hours of the house.
Yeah, we're getting, Illinois is getting, you know, we did quite a few in Illinois because we weren't chasing all over the country this year. And it's nice. We had one 30 miles from our house, you know, and we were home at 5:30 on Saturday afternoon, and we had one, I think, 75 miles from the house, another one about 60. So we've had quite a few of them within a couple hours, and it never used to be that way. We had one or two contests that were close, and that was about it. And now we're getting quite a few of them. But, you know, normally if we were chasing and we didn't really start out chasing anything this year. We just wanted to stay close to home, and so we're trying to finish the season off. You know, you're doing the best we can in chicken and ribs and brisket. We'll try to get our pork scores. You know, the last 2 years we were team of the year in pork, and I guess our pork seems to do better over on the East Coast and stuff like, you know, like Washington D.C. We won that 2 years in a row pork, and so they don't like it as well here as they do the other places. But we're going to try to finish off. We got, like I said, we only got 3 points paying events, and then we got three invitationals left. Sam's is this weekend, the final, and I believe they got $150,000 of prize money down there, so that's worth chasing.
Oh, yeah. Well, if I'd made it, I'd be going out there too. But I finished 13th with a 687, so I just, of course, I had to pick the strongest field, but I knew that going into it.
Did you, was that in your local or in your regional?
was in my regional.
Yeah, I thought you did. Didn't you? Did you win your local or?
No, I barely got out. I had a really bad cook down in Charleston. I got finished sixth. And
okay.
Like there were you the team look out for and all that stuff, and I just nothing really felt right to me. I mean, I finished sixth. I had a couple calls and squeaked in, and you know I was kind of upset. And my wife's like, you know, just all goes back to zero now. You need to, you know, but it kind of upset me that I had that bad of a cook after coming off the reserve in Jobiki. And I'm like, yeah, you want to say you're pissed off, but you weren't. You were just, I don't know, frustrated or whatever. It wasn't the judge, and it was just the cook. You know, I did it the same way. It just didn't turn out. And I squeaked in, so I had to go up against Barbecue and Swamp Boys and Everglades Seasoning.
Yeah, that was in Tennessee, right, the regional?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. There was quite a few good teams there. I know Big Mo, a friend of mine, you know, he cooked that one, and he had a bad cook, too. You know, that Sam's clubs are just funny. We won our local, and we went to the regional up here just north of the house here, about 2 hours from Rockford, Illinois. And the chicken was just pretty damn good. And we got to ribs, and I go, oh, my God, the ribs ain't done. And they weren't. They wouldn't come off the bone very well. They were a little bit. We used a different brand. You know, we try to use this IVP green labels that they sell at Sam's, but Sam's don't always have them. Sometimes they have different brands. Sometimes they have farmland, and I don't like the farmlands. They seem to be dry. Well, they had XL green label, and we did those, and they didn't turn out. They were a little bit dry, and I don't think I got them done anyway. And so we knew we were in trouble on ribs, and we're just thinking, oh, my God, this is going to keep us out of the finals. Well, we got second in chicken and second in brisket, and we had good enough pork, and we ended up eighth. And, boy, when they called us an eighth, we were just ecstatic because, you know, just making it to the final was that, you know, at that point. We knew we weren't going to win because we had crappy ribs, and just making it to the Sam's final because, like you say, it's everybody's on the same level right now. We're all starting out at zero, so we hope we're not going to make any mistakes. You know, we're going to get our ribs done. I'm going to make sure we get them done this weekend.
Well, extra time never hurts.
You know, we do that for the Royal. You know, when they don't have 550 certified judges there for the Open. They get a lot of people off the street, and you know, most people off the street. What do they say? They want, you know, falling off the bone tender. So we intentionally overcook them. For the Open, and I think that's the way to look at that.
That's what I do with some of these other sanctioning bodies. You know, with K2S, you got a really fine line, but I think with these other ones, I want to take it past that fine line and get it to where they, you know, fall off just a little bit.
Well, we've always done better with soft ribs. You know, I know when we, like I said, I think I've helped with 10 or 11 judging classes, and you know, I listen to what they say, and they say the meat shouldn't fall off the bone. You should be able to take a bite, and it comes away clean, and the bone starts to dry and turn white and stuff. But I'll tell you what, if you get them to where they're almost falling off the bone, you usually score better, that's for sure.
Yeah, they definitely don't like a tough rib, I know that. I mean, everybody's done it one time or another. It just depends on the kind of meat you get and what you do from one to the other, and yeah, I've had some Swiss premiums, believe it or not, be really good down here.
Swiss premium, I've had some of those. We can't get them around here. I haven't seen any, but I bought some Swiss premium one time, and I had good luck with them. I'm not a fan of the farmland. The Seaboard, which is out of Mission, Shawnee Mission, Kansas, I think. Those are a good brand. The other one, we got a Kroger store up here, and they sell silver platter ribs, and I like those real well. That's what we're using this weekend.
I'll usually get a free pack of the Swiss premiums, and I'll throw a Kroger one in there, and I can't tell the difference.
Oh, you guys got Kroger stores?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I like the Kroger silver platters. Those are my favorites.
I've kind of befriended the market manager up here, so when I cook briskets for my wife's sandwich shop, when they get IBP briskets up here anywhere, the last year I bought one, almost 18 pounds, and almost 19 pounds. I mean, and those beautiful flats on there, so thick.
Yeah.
But I myself up too around Christmas time. One was 19.9 to 20.1 pounds.
Huh.
Now, that's beautiful. And I wanted to age them and use them in the competition, but my wife needed some biscuits. They didn't have any more, so I had to cook them for a shop.
Huh.
I'm not kidding. The flat was about 3 inches thick. It was beautiful. It was great smoke ring. I said, damn it, I know I should save these for a comp somewhere. But
when we were cooking Walmart and Sam's briskets up until, we always would age them like 6 to 8 weeks. And we took them as far as we could. I mean, we always did well with them. We won a couple big contests early on, and then it just seems like everybody's using Wagyu around here, so or Creekstone, which is a prime grade, and it's you almost got to, you know, because they just have more fat content in them. And it's amazing how much they'll shrink up. Like I think we started with about a 19-pound brisket for the open. And when we get done with it, there ain't much left of it because there's so much fat in it. But, you know, you get nice slices and everything. That's all you care about. So I don't really care how much it shrinks, but just want the finished product.
So as long as you got nothing to put in the box, you're fine.
Exactly.
I think, though, you know, going back to flavor profiles of judges, I think they're kind of used to the Wagyu now. And because, you know, a lot of people use them. So if they get one, you know, like the Sam's or the Walmart ones, like what you're mentioning, the IPP ones, you know, if you don't age them as long as you do, which a lot of people won't because they're afraid they'll, you know, take them too far or whatever, you know, there's a texture difference in it. You know, they're a little bit more grainier than the Wagyu.
That's true.
And I think it throws the judges off. You know, it almost throws their, not only your texture score off, but it might throw your taste score off because, you know, it's got a beefy taste, but to me, if you do the same thing to a Wagyu, I think it absorbs a little bit more of the flavor than a regular one does. I don't know if that's because of the fat or whatever. You know, everybody says fat has flavor, but, you know, I think it's more the texture thing with the brisket than anything. And,
yeah, there's more of a texture difference, yeah.
And I think the judges are more accessible to, like, a little bit more buttery texture than, but like you said, if you age them for, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, you're going to get that, but most people who are doing it, you know, that aren't spending the money on the Wagyu, they're not going to really know how to properly age them anyway.
Well, you know, we got a walk-in cooler, and I'll tell you, we keep it set for about 33 degrees, and we've had briskets. Actually, last year, we had a bunch of briskets in there we were aging, and then we switched over to Wagyu, and then we just left them in there in the bottom. And it's cold down there at the bottom, and they weren't frozen or anything, but some of them were in there 3 months, and one of them, the cryovac, was popped, so it was no good. But the rest of them, we made pastrami out of. After 3 months, we pop them open, and they didn't smell bad or anything, so we just made pastrami out of them. And, you know, beef, as long as it's kept really cold, you can age your stuff for a long time. You got to keep them in a cold refrigerator. Like, if you're going to use an old refrigerator or something, it's got to be something that you don't open very often. It's
right.
When you have the temperature going up and down because the door's opening and closing, that'll screw them up. But there's nothing wrong with aging beef. Now, I wouldn't recommend aging chicken or pork, but beef, you can age it a long time.
Well,
as long as you keep it really cold.
I've got a cooler, like an old Pepsi cooler, that I keep right about 34 degrees. It'll vary between 32 and 34 degrees, you know, just depending on what's in there. And I might open it maybe once or twice a week at the most.
Yeah,
and you know it's kind of, and the good thing about it is, you know, when you get your Snake River and it tells you what the packing date is,
uh-huh.
And it helps you out with a starting point. But sometimes, you know, you get them and you're like, okay, I'm gonna buy these briskets for this contest, which are, you know, 45 days away, and then when you get it, it's already got 35 days on it. You're like, well, son of a bitch. And then talking to some other teams, they definitely want their brisket frozen 2 or 3 weeks before they use it. They want to age it and freeze it and throw it back out. And, you know, that's just their, you know, they say, well, we don't really know what it does. Somebody told me that when you freeze and throw out, it kind of ages a little bit, but to me, it just kind of breaks stuff down that probably somebody, you don't want it broken down.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're probably a little more crazy than most people, but I talked to Dave Bosco, you know, Butcher. He knows a lot about meat, and, you know, I know quite a bit about it, and I'd never like to freeze briskets, but he's got a flat commercial flash freezer, and that's the way to do that. We got a small flash freezer, and basically what it'll do is got a high-speed fan in it, and it'll get down to about 25 below. And the idea is to get that brisket or any type of meat, you want to get the internal temperature down to zero as quick as possible, and it does very little damage. But when you throw it in a regular freezer, you know, like a chest freezer somewhere, it's maybe 5 or 6 below. That brisket takes hours and hours and hours to, you know, get frozen. And that's when you break down some of the water cells in it. And that way, when it thaws out, you know, you got so much of that red liquid in the cryovac.
Yeah.
When we use the flash freezer, the freezer brisket, and you thaw them out, they don't have that, you know, there'll be a little bit of it, but not very much. And the brisket that we tied for first at the Royal Open there yesterday, it was frozen. We thawed it out. But like I say, it was flash frozen too, so it was about a 20-pounder, and makes a big difference. I got a 23-pounder sitting there, and not taking it. I worked thawing out a 19-pounder right now to go down to Sam's Club, and then I got a 23-pounder in there. Trying to decide whether I use it the week after up in Libertyville or use it at the Jack. I just got to look at them. You know, I will pull a few out, and I look at them. I weigh them. Look at the flat. Look at the point. Trying to figure out where the burnt ends are coming from. You know, I get pretty anal about it, but, you know, you got to look at that stuff ahead of time.
Well, you look at what contest you can use it at. All right, who's got more money?
Yeah, well, that's true. So, yeah, we're going to use the, you know, like I said, we're going to, the one we picked out for the Sam's Club, it's a nice one. And like I said, that's 23-pounder. I haven't looked at it. I traded a guy. He had, he uses WSMs, and Snake River sent him this 23-pounder, and I had a couple, like 13-pounders, and he'd rather use those than his WSM because the 23-pounder won't fit, so I traded him two of those for one 23-pounder, and we'll figure out, you know, maybe, and then we got to have a couple nice ones for the World Food, and then, we'll see what happens. But, yeah, I got to pick them. Usually, and what we'll do sometimes is if we got 3 or 4 of them laid out, I'll just take duct tape and go around them, and we'll mark them, you know, which contests are for. If they're not frozen, but all the ones we got, I think, for the rest of the year are frozen.
Yeah, I'm glad to see I'm not the only one that looks at the brisket there. Can we use this one for this contest, this one for this one? This one's got a lot of money in it, so I need to get a bigger one. Because the thing out, you know, everybody says, well, I like 15, 16-pounders. But the thing about the bigger ones is you can trim it down to that. You got a chance to get a better flat. But, you know, the meat that I take off mine, if I trim them down a good bit, I'll make hamburger out of it. You know, they make really great hamburgers.
Yeah, we keep our – the first batch of hamburger I made, I used too small of a grinding the holes, and it made it too fine, and so it falls apart. And so next time I grind, we got a whole couple bags now of Wagyu that I need to grind, and I'm going to use the bigger holes. So, you know, when you make a patty, it'll hold together a little bit better. But I'll tell you the truth, the ones that I think have the best flavor are the, 13, 14, 12-pounders. The trouble is the slices aren't very tall. But I tell you what, we've won several contests with them smaller ones, and I think the flavor is better. But when you get, if you can nail those big ones with the big, you know, flats that are nice tall slices, boy, do they look nice in a box. And judges pick those up, and I think it's impressive when they see a nice tall slice. And so I prefer to cook the big ones, but you know, you got to be a little more careful with them. You got to get those done. There's been a couple times they are so big. I thought they were up to temp and everything, and the edges are the right temp, but the center maybe isn't. And then, you know, they might pull all right on the edges, and the center maybe doesn't pull right. So you got to be careful when you trim them and everything. Because I swear some of them big ones, we'll get three pounds of fat off of them, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, when they're right up between the point and the flat, you know, right up there at that edge.
Yeah.
They'll become about 6 inches, and you got to go in and take some of that out of there, that part won't ever get done. And when you take it out, you got a lot, like you said, you got, you know, just fat, because you always got the big chunk on the side that you got to take off. You got that. But when I trim mine, I try to leave fat on the, you know, in between there a good bit, an even amount. to where when you start getting off the point and the flat comes out just a flat, I like to leave it all even so they're all cooked the same. And but you know, you don't want to take too much out of it. The good thing about the smaller briskets, you really don't have to do a whole lot of trimming to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Know what they are. I got one of my highest brisket scores, you know, one appearance score away from a perfect 180 using a 14-pound Snake River.
Yeah.
Now I trimmed the top. I didn't even put any burnt ends in. I trimmed the top of the brisket, seasoned up, threw it on the smoker. And I actually got it that day from a buddy of mine who got it from a wholesale supplier. And, you know, I had frozen it. I just got it that day. So it was not a whole lot of money in this contract. I'm going to cook this. So hell, I ended up third with 179 point, I don't know, was it 4286 or whatever. But two people in front of me had perfect 180s. So I couldn't do a whole lot. But
yeah, that happens. You know, that's happened to us several times. Last year at the chicken, we got first in. This year we got chicken, and then the second place, Ryan Newstrom and I both had, we were 1.8 in presentation away from a 180 pin. So that's four times in those big contests that missed a 180 because, you know, we got an 8 in presentation. Two 8s, you know, you just throw the one out, but the other 8 counts. And that's, you know, you get a 179 point, was it 0.6 or something like that? And, man, just 1.8 in presentation keeps you from getting a 180 pin. And, you know, you weren't cooking back years ago when they all the scores used to start at 9 and go down. And, you know, 180s used to be fairly common, and we got a bunch of them back then. But since they changed it, I think we've only got one 180. But we've had a bunch of them that were close.
Yeah.
And I think there was one 180 at the Royal this year in meat, but I can't remember what category it was. Might have been ribs, not positives. I know somebody got a 180 in meat on the first day.
Chris Lilly got one in sausage.
Yeah. You know, we won sausage there back in, I think, 2007. We did like a breakfast sausage or something and got a big sausage. They give a big trophy away for sausage. And, yeah, they give away a lot of money. I think it was, you know, it's like winning a meat category. So, yeah, good deal.
Yeah. Well, Mike, we've been out of time a little bit. You know, we said how long can we talk about barbecue? Well, we just show people we could talk all night if we wanted to.
Yeah.
But I really, really enjoyed you coming on the show and learning about you. And hopefully I'll see you at a contest and everything and hook up with you. You know, we always do these little Thursday or Friday night dinners. We started out this year, these potluck dinners, and down here in Georgia and South Carolina, North Carolina, we kind of become a tradition now, one way or the other. But you know, I'm looking forward to meeting you again in person. I shook your hand up in Canton last year, but you know, it was right before awards, and everybody's coming up, you know, to wish you good luck and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I just got to keep myself real quick. So I know you only meet, you know, a few thousand people every year, so.
Yeah.
But, you know, one day I'll get to meet you in person, and we'll sit down and talk some more.
Okay, you're not going to be down in Demopolis, are you?
No, I won't. I think I've got an ESPN event to do that weekend.
Well, there's a Georgia contest that day, too, anyway, I think so. But
yeah,
we'll get down there in that part of the woods. You know, we haven't been out. We'll get down there, like, next spring probably sometime. But, yeah, we'll run into you somewhere.
I'm sure we will. We'll keep in touch. And, you know, I always look to see where y'all are at. I know y'all are number one in the country right now. And so I'm wishing y'all good luck. And is there anybody we want to give a shout-out to or anything while we're on the air? Or,
no, that's okay. All right.
Know, but anyway, it was great having you on here.
All right, anytime. Just give us let us know if you want us to talk about something in particular. I can do it.
That's fine. I may get a rock around here one time, get you to call in, and we'll harass him together.
Okay.
All right.
Well, appreciate you having me on, and we'll talk to you later then.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Good luck in your next contest. We're,
all right. Thank you.
We'll see you. Thank you. Right. Have a good
day. You too. Bye.
So that was Mike from QL, the number one team in the country, just kind of coming off reserve grand in at the American Royale Open. Congrats to him on that, and also wish him good luck in the future contest. He's a very viable competitor, number one team in the country, a very consistent cook, and hopefully you could have picked up a few little tidbits of information from him, and hopefully you learned something from it. So, as again, I want to thank Butcher Barbecue for coming on board, Royal Oak Charcoal, Southern Q Smokers, Fireside Outdoor Kitchen and Grills, Phoenix Printing, and everybody else who's affiliated with Killer Bees. If you hadn't had a chance to join Barbecue Superstars, do so now. You go to our website. And we will see you next week at same time, 7 to 9 on Monday night. Y'all have a good evening.